start. Please welcome to our meeting this morning.
SDA related matters. Getting a briefing from AG, SIU, and SDA. I received the apology of the minister. And the deputy minister is here. Chair of the board is here. The executives are here. Along with CB and the SIU team are present, and the AG team in its full complement of this portfolio is also present. So we are good to go. And of course, most importantly, we are here. They are cool, but not in the best. So colleagues, welcome to our meeting. We're not going to waste time because there's three presentations, so that we are able to conclude on time. Diem, I'm going to hand over to you if there's any opening remarks that you may have, and then we will go to AG first, and then we'll go to SIU, and then go to SDA to provide you the opportunity if there's any reaction on the issue you have raised first, before you field questions for us, maybe if you want to fill in any gaps to that. Please take your presentations as read and cover the key salient points of all that you will be presenting. And as a standard, if you've missed anything, the colleagues will always go back to each of the issue that you want to have. So we're going to go to the DM and then we'll go to the chair of the board. Then we'll kick off with UAG. Fine. All right, over to you,
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Standing Committee of Public Accounts, Honorable Flema, and all members of the SCOPA who are present here, and greetings to the Chair of SAA. He always loves to say he's not interim chair, he's a chair in the interim board. I don't know what that means. The chair in the interim board. And then also a team CEO of SAA, and greetings to SIU and the AG's office, and the department is led here by the acting DG and the DDG responsible, particularly for this portfolio. Usually when there's a board in the attendance, the shareholder tends to give those who are more daily focusing on the entity that they've been appointed to lead, and obviously the management will follow them. And I've been engaging with the chair. He says, no, he's appearing here for the second time, he's not going to say anything. He'll wait for the answers, as he doesn't work that way. So I just welcome them as I did, but we had a very successful AGM recently of SAA, and I'll be able to comply to some of the things that are here. The story might not as good, but it's good. There's a movement, there's a better scenario, particularly this item on non-tabling of annual reports. At least we'll be able then to table on the annual financial statement. There will also be, and I think that will be attested to by the AG's office also. So that, indeed, as you know, the SAA come from a very difficult environment, but they are getting there now steadily. They are on the skies, and but not where we want it to be, but gradually. Go in that direction, but let me leave that when the report is presented. Chair, I don't know, you're my very kind of one.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, and Deputy Minister. I'm aware that the CEO has prepared a more substantial presentation, so I don't want to really encroach on that terrain. But just a couple of words, honourable members and members of the SIU and the Auditor General's Office and officials from the Department. Yes, we have gone through a very difficult time, and that's quite clear. So what is presented here is nothing that anyone would want to feel proud of in terms of the AG report. We've got 4 years worth of terrible performance, and that will come out very clearly. We weren't expecting otherwise. There are disclaimers, which you will hear about. I think the big challenge for us, Chairperson, is firstly putting the EZA to rest, and I think that's been an extraordinary effort on the side of the ARGO, the Audit and Risk Committee and Governance Committee, and the management of SAA and the Auditor General's Office to deal with the 4 outstanding years of audits. It's been almost like a superhuman effort, and people have been working around the clock to get to this point where at least the audits can be tabled. I think the big test is going to be the year that we're in at the moment, the financial year, and of course and we're doing our utmost and determined to have an unqualified audit at least for this year. That's the year 23-24. But for the moment, it is what it is. The big challenge, Chairperson, is how we navigate our way out of this, how we move forward and with good governance and an airline that becomes a viable airline once again, an airline that you, members of Parliament, honourable members, can also feel correct, justifiably proud of. And I think that's part of our challenge. You'll have heard, Chairperson, that we have started and re-entering the intercontinental space, the long-haul flights, starting with Sao Paulo, two flights a week from Cape Town, two flights a week from Johannesburg. We have another intercontinental flight coming up early next year. The CEO might want to tell you about that. But I think those are, and then of course the, and lastly I'll end here, part of the difficulty, Chairperson, even in us preparing our corporate plan for 24, 25 and the years beyond, and we've had a strategic session, we've worked on it, and clearly it will have a budget for 24-25 in it. But part of the difficulty, Chairperson, has been the uncertainty about the share equity partner. And we don't know when it's going to happen. We know that it's on the cards. We've called an interim board, which is fine, but we take full responsibility as accounting authority, whether we call it interim or not. It doesn't really matter. But the problem is the uncertainty makes long-term planning a little bit difficult, because along with the arrangement with the share equity partner would be the capital injection. Now, the question for us is really, is that capital, can we plan on that capital injection of 3 billion rand coming in, or should we plan as if it's not going to happen? The good news is that on the cash flow side, we're healthy. So SAA is not going to collapse, but certainly the growth that we have in mind will depend on the capital injection. We have received nothing from government, nothing from Treasury, including the amount that had been pledged by Treasury. And we're fine with it. We'll survive without any subsidy from the state. And we are surviving without any subsidy from the state, and we're not asking for any further contributions from Treasury. But at the moment, the scenario is the 3 billion injection that is meant to come from the share equity partner. And it still has a number of uncertainties attached to it. As you know, we've read in the media, in any event. Lastly, Chairperson, good news, I suppose, is that, in principle, it's been approved by the Competition Commission, by the Tribunal, and the Tribunal decision that there should be no retrenchments has given a little bit of comfort to senior management and other staff members at SAA. So that even when the new arrangement kicks in, and there is a new majority shareholder, they're not going to come in, and they won't be allowed to come in and just kick people out and retrench people. So that was a good, we think, a good decision from the Tribunal, but still a number of things have to be done before this new arrangement can be concluded and kick in. Thanks, Chairperson.
to the AG to take us through 1819, 1920, and 21-22 audits which have been outstanding and which we have been fundamentally concerned about, and the rightly pushed that this audit should happen. And I think it's good that we are finally here. Let's hear what's going on. Welcome to you and your team. AG, over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you to yourself and the committee for the invitation to come and brief the committee around the group audit outcomes. Maybe just to step back with a greeting to the committee, to the Deputy Minister, as well as to the DG and the officials from the department. By way of introduction, my name is Madhima Lupingo. I lead a business unit within the ADSA that is responsible for the SOE. Today I'm accompanied by a team that is working very closely on the SOE. To my right, I've got Pumulani Rabonda. Pumulani is the deputy business executive that is responsible for the SOE audit, and he leads the team on the ground in terms of the execution of that particular audit, and he is also going to be leading the presentation today. Also with us today is Mr. Kamsanya Sipode. He's sitting right at the back. He is the he leads the three business units within the ADSA portfolio, and particularly also within the SOE space. We also have Sulufelo Sawahale, who's the lady in red at the back. She is one of the SAA subsidiaries, so she's the engagement manager that is responsible for that particular audit. And also we have Tato Jimenez, who is actually responsible for the SAA group audit. So he was responsible for the actual execution of the audit. With those introductions, Chair, I think it's important that as we brief the committee, one of the critical things that we believe in as the ADSA is us ensuring that we capacitate the committee in terms of holding the executive authority as well as the accounting authority accountable for the audits that we look at. And from that perspective, we do believe that the presentation that we're going to do today in terms of the audit outcomes of the SAA group are indeed going to assist the committee in terms of holding the executive authority and the accounting authority responsible for the affairs of the AG. Having said that, I think it's important that as we bring the committee, we maybe start with a bit of context in terms of where we come with this audit. As you rightly indicated, Chair, we are going to be presenting audit outcomes for a period of 4 years. And the reason why we're presenting over a period of 5 years is that when SAA experienced some difficulties, financial difficulties in about 2017-18, the board at the time requested that the ADSA pause the audit while they deal with the growing concern challenges that the agency was facing at that particular point in time. What that led to was that we had to pause the audit of 2018, and in pausing that audit while the board dealt with those challenges, it meant that we were not able to finalize that particular audit on time. Post that, the SAA group was put under a business rescue, which was done in 2018. And I think it was done in 2018 around December, 2019 around December. And during that particular period, it then gave the opportunity to reflect on the financial assets of the entity. And the entity was then put under business rescue. And that was really to deal with the solvency and liquidity challenges that the agency was facing at that particular point in time. Following the conclusion of the business rescue process, we were then able to finalize the audit of the 2018 financial year, which was outstanding at that particular point in time. We have subsequently briefed the committee around the outcomes of that audit in around May 2022, and today they're going to be presenting the remainder of the 4 years audit outcomes that related to the period 2019 to 2022. It has been quite a challenge, I must be honest, in terms of the AGP executing this particular audit, mainly because about the length of time that it took to finalize the business risk process and for the board to deal with the financial challenges. And indeed, when we were auditing, we did realize that to a greater extent, we struggled quite a bit with accessing the relevant information that that supports the financial statements that we submitted for audit. Together with the board and management, we really tried to make sure that from our perspective, we get the evidence that supports the numbers that we reported in the financial statement. And unfortunately, in most instances, we were then not able to find that information, which has led to a disclaimer of audit opinion over the period of 5 years, over the period of the 4 years that we looked at. So as we speak today, we're then going to then articulate what those outcomes are, and we're also then going to look at the impact of that particular disclaimer of audit opinion and what it generally means for the AEC. As it relates to the financial statements of 2023, the board did submit those financial statements to us in October. We currently still busy with that particular audit, and we will then be able to brief the audit committee, the committee on that once that audit has been finalized. With that said, I'm going to pause here and allow Murali to then take us through the presentation, and then as to your guidance, going to take it as read and go through the final features of our presentation, and then we'll take reflections immediately thereafter.
Okay, so I will bump into Mr. Airport today. I hope he flew down with his as a confidence of his own audit.
morning, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members of the committee. I've collected the projector. I see it's not even meeting on the screen there. I see. But while that is green, but you can carry on, sort of, it's fine. Thank you, Chair. Madrimalo has already dealt with the fact that in the briefing number that we shared is marked as a background information, so I'm not going to touch on that anymore now. I will move on directly to the audit outcome. So the audit outcome for the past 4 years, which covers 2018-19 up to 2021-22, is what we call a disclaimer of audit opinion. And a disclaimer of audit opinion means that the financial statements that have been published cannot be relied upon because there's no evidence to support the numbers that are sitting in the financial statements. As we try to compare that with the previous time we did the audit, which was 2017-18. 2018, it was a qualified audit, which means the financial statements can be lightly relied upon, except for the specific areas that we would have highlighted. So in this regard, currently we are saying for all the 4 years, we cannot rely on those financial statements. And the biggest reason for that is because management was unable to provide us with the evidence to support the financial, the numbers that are in the financial statements. And we'll deal with some of the reasons why they were unable to do that. And then we look at the performance report. The performance reports for the 4 years were not submitted for audit, so they were not prepared. But in the previous year, which was 2018, we did audit two objectives there, which one of them was we had material issues, and the other one was material issues. So just for comparability purposes. Compliance, also we are seeing material non-compliance across the board in most of the compliance focus areas. Mostly it's limited scope in most of these areas, specifically issues around consequence management, expenditure management, procurement management, and also revenue management that we are unable to get audit evidence to support the compliance activities of the entity in that regard. It is also important, Chair, to highlight that This regression is also attributable to the fact that during the business rescue process, there were no measures put in place to preserve the critical skills of the entity. So there were a loss of critical skills, a lot of people in the finance function left the entity. And also post business rescue process, when the board took over from May 2021, up to now, there have not been effort to stabilize the capacity from the financial function, and to be unable to gather evidence that is required to support the financial statements. Just want to also touch on the outcome of the subsidiary, which is a technical, anxious, and also member, all of them also being disclaimed. For member, it has been disclaimed even for 2017-2018. But for technical and Asher, the distributed regression is previously qualified, which meant that previously we could rely on the financial statements, but except for the certain errors that were highlighted. There are also other two entities, Chair, that are within the SAA group, which we have not been able to audit, and that is the travel center, which is a dormant entity, so we have been able to audit for the past 5 years that one. And then the SAA Employee Share Trust, we have not been provided with the financial statements of that share trust as well for us to do the audit, and it has also been reflected in the audit report. I've also already spoken about management's inability to provide us with evidence to support the audit process, but it's important to maybe just sit a bit on this one, because we're saying that there's a lack of adequate skills and capacity to prepare credible financial statements and to support the audit process. I made the point that employees with knowledge of the SAA business and records of transactions have already left the company. During the business process, there were no measures to preserve those skills, and this affected the credibility of financial statements prepared, as the experienced personnel with knowledge of the entity are no longer there. And I've already spoken about the part of the business rescue process, that management and the board have not established an appropriate organizational structure, that an internal capacity to facilitate effective control environment for reliable financial reporting. And also, it's worth noting that a disclaiming of its opinion has painted the SAA as an environment that is failing to implement robust financial management systems and credible financial reporting. And it's also an environment that is failing to account for the financial affairs of the entity. We also noted that when we tried to track the audit come from 2018, that there was no effective action plan to address and resolve the previously reported material issues. We engaged with the management, we engaged with the board, and we tried to come up with some of the recommendations in terms of what needs to be done to try and address this thing. But focusing on the root causes first was that key executive leadership vacancies must be filled with experienced and skilled individuals. And this is linked to the comment that the chairperson mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, that there are a lot of uncertainties in terms of when will the SDP transition comes into play. And that is the result of the SAA to operate on interim structures, interim management and interim executive management. So as a result, that left with them with a big gap in terms of a strong internal control environment. We were also saying that management must ensure that officials that are responsible for preparation of financial statements and also for the compliance function, including supply chain, are properly trained, and these departments should be capacitated with qualified people. Executive leadership must ensure that that adequate and realistic action plans are implemented to address material issues that have been previously reported. I'm not going to go into detail in terms of the internal operations and drug control that you have mentioned, but we need to also talk about the financial viability of the entity. I'm just going to page to that part. As the chairperson has indicated, the board indicated that the company is currently viable. That is our finding as well, in terms of when we look at the going concern assessment that management has done, we're able to confirm that it's supported by information, by evidence. However, there are uncertainties that the future viability of the entity is relied upon. And the first part is that the expansion plan that the entity has set for themselves, they have not really fully achieved where the progress is not where they planned to be. So we noted it as a slow progress in the implementation of the expansion plan, and the full implementation of the plan will determine the future of the company. And also another thing is that there's continued dependency on the shareholder funding to implement the business risk plan. We have noted that currently the green concern assessment that was provided for the purpose of the audit, it included some of the projection in terms of how much is expected from the shareholder for the entity to be able to fully implement the BR plan. And also the uncertainty with regard to the finalization of the SEP transaction to dispose of the 20% controlling shareholding. When that will come into play, the intention, the structure of the business, and also how much money will come in. All those things are a serious uncertainty. And also there are continued challenges with regard to the repatriation of funds from foreign countries. There are a number of jurisdictions that SAA previously included in, where there are funds that are locked in those countries, and the exchange control regulations of those countries do not allow SAA to get those funds back. So that's a lot of money that if it comes in, it can help the entity take it. The subsidiaries of SAA as well, Asia, SAA Chemical and Mango, they are dependent on SAA for survival. SAA and SAA, they have presented a plan where they say they are trying to reduce the over-reliance on SAA so that they can become a viable business in the absence of SAA. But the information thereof is low in question. And Mango, as we know, currently is a business rescue. All the lead aircraft have been returned to the lessor, and the operations have come to a halt at Mango. Let me come to the main conclusion and also the... Sorry, before I come to that, there's a part that talks to irregularities that happens within the SAA space. We'll note the chairperson that SAA group has historically been characterized by irregularities, and that was noted or findings from the Commission of Inquiry from the capture, which revealed that there was a steep decline in quality and effectiveness of governance in SAA between the years 2012 and 2018. This poor quality and effectiveness developed over that period. The inquiry found that during this period, the acts of corruption and fraud took place at SAA and SAA Chemical. These matters, we have noted that they are currently under investigation by the SIU. We have also noted that their office also investigates some of them. So these matters, they happened in a period that's not covered by the principle that we have audited. So we have noted that there are investigations that are underway by this law enforcement agency. The investigations were not part of our scope. However, we engage with the SIU to track progress on the investigations, because the outcome of the investigation will also have audit implications on our side. That is why we do not just say they are not, they are out of the scope, but we track the outcome thereof, because they may have implications on the audit. And also they may also have implications in terms of whether any of them may result in what we call material irregularities, which are within the mandate of the agency. So we, as I have indicated, that in conclusion, the disclaimer of the opinion on the financial statement renders the financial statement not reliable for purpose of decision making, and compromises effective oversight. So basically, this committee and other committees of parliament, they cannot use those evidence for oversight purposes, because the numbers that are there, we don't have evidence for them. And the inability of the accounting authority to ensure that the action plan is given out and implemented has a detrimental impact on the ability of the community to improve its control environment. A disclaimer of the opinion pays SAA, I've already indicated this part of an environment that is failing to implement effective measures for financial management. And while noting that there is an ongoing subsidy equity partnership transition that aims to transfer the controlling stake to a private partner, the company is currently 100% state owned. The current board and management have a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of the company and its shareholders, which is shared with the government. This fiduciary duty includes ensuring that the company is well equipped to achieve its objectives. So the second chair links to with our observation that is post-business process. There have not been efforts to stabilize executive management and the capacity in the entity. And I think the current board have got that duty to ensure that the company is well structured, irrespective of what we foresee coming in terms of whether the company will be privately owned in the future. But right now, the current shareholder being the government, they must feel that the company is being run in the best interest of government. And also in the context of the SEP transition again, the disclaimer in the audit opinion, it creates challenges in terms of determining appropriate values for the company and its assets. And this results in the terms of the sale and the selling price not being at terms that we will say they are well informed by numbers of current values of those assets and liabilities of the entity. So that's the context now of the disclaimer of the opinion on the valuation that are supposed to be used in determining the value of the entity. I'm not going to dwell too much into the recommendations that we have made to the accounting authority, but when we met with the shareholder representative, the minister at the AGM, we also made some few recommendations. And one of them was that the SEP transition appears to have been a distraction in terms of, I keep forgetting to page it because I'm using the script. We said that the SEP transition appears to have been a distraction in terms of building governance structure within the entity, as there are uncertainties with regard to when the SEP transition will take effect. In the interim, while waiting on the financing of the SEP transition, the executive committee is advised to drive stability at board level. That means that the current members of the board that have been appointed, the executive committee should try to deliver the stability in terms of that. The authority is further advised to mandate and support the board to establish appropriate governance structures with stable executive management to stabilize operations and to grow the entity in the best interest of the shareholders. The authority is advised to follow up and ensure that the business risk plan is fully implemented and support the accounting authority in securing the balance of the reserve funds. Commission treasurer, certain of the board indicated that some of their funds which have been confirmed were not made available, so this one is the thing that we're making. The authority needs to hold the departments, which is DPE, and the accounting authorities accountable for clear plans on the implementation and continuous monitoring of implementation of the recommendations of the Strategic Commission of Inquiry, as well as audit action plans to improve audit outcome. And we make this recommendation not necessarily in the context only of SAA, but other SOEs within the DPE portfolio, because they have been affected by the findings from the Commission. And finally, the authority needs to continue to drive accountability to the board to improve performance and achieve pledged targets in the shareholders' compact. So finally, Chair, we then also have some recommendations to this committee. And in this committee, we are advising that the committee needs to continue to follow up with both the board and also with the minister in terms of the action plans that are in place to address or improve operations of the entity, financial management of the entity, and also other outstanding matters, including the SEP transition, the progress there, and also stabilization of the governance structure of the entity, and including the final conclusion and approval of the shareholders' compact, because currently still absent in that document. Chair, I'm going to pause here and allow Madi to just close if there is other matters that should be added from the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kumarani. And I think Chairperson has comprehensively covered the audit outcomes of the SAA group. Safe to say that when we also looked at compliance with laws and regulations, one of the other critical things that we were also picking up was that when we look at the issues of consequence management as well as ongoing investigations, we did see that once the company and its subsidiaries continue to struggle with compliance with laws and regulations, but we also noted that when it relates to consequence management, there is slow progress in terms of implementing consequence management. And to that extent, we do understand the impact as well from the perspective of the business rescue process, the impact of the local skills that would have impacted the investigations that would have been ongoing. So that is also an area that we believe requires agent attention in terms of ensuring that investigations are carried out timely, consequence management for those that are found to be transgressing against compliance with local regulations that actually is also taken into account. With that said, I think we've covered the key methods relating to the audit outcomes, and we will now see reflections from the committee as well as questions from the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, AG. I'm just going to constitute a reshuffle there so that we can get Team SIU on. So it's not a midnight reshuffle.
broad daylight. As we shift, Team AG, please convey our congratulations to the AG on their appointment to the external auditor on UNESCO. I think it's moment for all of us to be proud of the country, and we wish them all the best of those responsibilities. So please convey what thanks. I know Mamson, the chair of the AG, has also issued a statement which we fully subscribe to. So our congratulations to the AG.
Yes, thank you.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we also greet the Deputy Minister of Affairs and Chair of the Board, Mr. Nkom, my colleague, the CEO of SAA and DG, and all the colleagues from the department and from the AG's office. Honorable Chair, we're giving you a presentation today as an update of our investigation at SAA. I will introduce my team. Mr. Lakheto, who's the Chief National Investigating Officer, is overseeing the investigation. And Advocate Fanava is here. He's also overseeing the civil litigation and some of the legal aspects of the investigations. And we also have Mr. Katleho Lindsay, who is the lead investigator in this investigation. So that's the team that's joining me today. Honorable Chair, we'll go really straight to slide number 8, where we introduce the proclamation. As you can see, that the proclamation was really signed back in 2020, and picking up from what the AG has said, we really would like today present with certainty in terms of the date of the finalization of the investigation. So just as a quick background, and I think we've really presented before, the SAA management back in 2019, approached SIU because they wanted to do forensic investigation, and we collaborated and then signed a secondment agreement with SAA to start the investigation internally. So as part of that, we then collected evidence pointing to certain of the allegations, and we prepared a proclamation which was signed by the President in 2020. Now the investigations have really progressed. So the terms of reference of the investigation, just listening to what the Auditor General has been presenting and what probably the SAA management would present, these cover allegations which were made at various, well, I suppose, two areas of the business of SAA. SAA, I suppose, like as a holding company, and SAA Technica in the main. And you will see there in terms of the proclamations, SIU was directed to investigate the procurement aspects for the contracting environment around the Airbus aircraft, maintenance, repair and operations services at South African Airways Technica.
So that's the technical part of the
business. And then there was a legal services contract that was also alleged to have been awarded irregularly. And also investigating service providers to support and expedite implementation of the SAA turnaround plan. And then another area is to investigate maladministration in the affairs of SAA, relating to the travel rebate benefits and payments made to SAA vendors and the implementation of the 30% broad-based black economic empowerment supplier set initiative in respect of the supply and delivery of the jet fuel. We also looked at the irregular, improper or lawful conduct of officials or employees of SAA or any other person or entity in relation to the allegations that were included in the schedule of the proclamation. As I indicated, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the investigations as we present now, and Mr. Khato will do the presentation shortly, there will be dates that we indicate in terms of when each aspect will be finalized, because really we want the SAA to have certainty in terms of that. This, in terms of the areas and the period within which they were committed, this we really, as we engage and seek to engage with SAA, that it should really assist SAA in making a clean break with the past, in terms of ensuring that, you know, all these irregularities, maladministration is really dealt with, as now there's this huge transition, you know, into the reconfigured SAA, if I were to put it that way. I'm going to pause at this stage, Chair. At the end of the presentation, we do point to the role of the accounting authority, which was the previous board or boss, which will be specifically identified as we close the investigation. And there will be specific recommendations made in that regard, so that the accounting authority and the board are also held to account. As we are aware that some of the board members are already facing consequence management. The previous board chair is undergoing legal processes, criminal proceedings. In terms of some of the roles that she played there. I'm going to hand over to Mr. Lakhato, who will now just go into the aspects of this investigation in terms of where and the status of the investigation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Advocate. Greetings to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, Honourable DM, Honourable CEO, and the DG, and the colleagues present in this meeting. In terms of the summary of the progress of the investigation, we have put them into different focus areas, I will try to summarize the presentation. The first one being the turnaround strategy, where the allegation is that the issuing of RFQ with a required response time of 3 days only, and only one bidder responded, and no adherence to SEM policy and procedures was done. In terms of this focus area, we found that there was non-compliance with TFMA, SEM policy, and procedure, as well as the National Trade Regulation and Practice Notes. The value of the contract is 170 million, and during secondment, the SIU recommended the cancellation of the contract, which was done by SAA, and this resulted in a saving of 130 million by SAA, and this investigation is finalized. Then in terms of the outcome, criminal referrals, we have done one criminal referral to the Hawks, and the reference number is outlined there. And civil recovery, ASU is involved in the civil litigation to recover a potential amount of close to 40 million. Saving on this matter is 130 million, and disciplinary referrals could not be made because all the members have left the employment of SAA when we did the investigation. The second focus area is ground power unit, which is the assets were sold by SAT at a lesser value than their book value. The outcome or progress is that SAT disposed of GPUs at a loss of 5.6 million, meaning the difference between the book value and market value price and the value actual sold. The disposal process did not follow the applicable SEM processes, and criminal referrals was done. Counsel is appointed in order to declare the contract irregular, and we are awaiting outstanding invoices from SAA in order to quantify the loss suffered. And in terms of the end date of this investigation, we anticipate it will be ended on the 30th of November 2023. That is the quantification process. In terms of the outcomes, we have referrals to the Hawks, and civil recovery counsel is appointed to recover at least 5.6 million. And administrative action, we have referred one former board member, and of which membership was withdrawn, and a fine was imposed by SAICA, and SIU is considering a CITC referral against the company directors. Then in terms of disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make any disciplinary referrals because the officials have left the employment of SAA. Focus area number three, that is logistics services, that is bid and SEM irregularities. Here the findings is that tender for logistics services, value is still to be determined. One company was awarded the tender although their bid document seems to be non-responsive, seems not to have capacity to fulfill the bid specifications. The decision to award this company was later amended. Instead of a new process followed, the board recommended that the bid be awarded to the supplier who had been providing the services contrary to the processes. On this one, the investigation is still ongoing and it's going to be finalized at the end of February 2024. Then in terms of the outcome, we have done criminal referrals and the inquiry number is there. Civil recovery, SIU is considering to set aside the contract on the ground of legality and possible recovery. Currently, we are doing quantification process so that we can able to know how much we got to recover. Administrative action, there's a possible referral of evidence against four former board members and four officials of SAA and possible company directors. Disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make it because the official have left the employment of SAA. However, this official will be cited when we do the civil proceeding. Focus area number four, tire tender, SEM and tender irregularities. On this one, investigation is ongoing, and we have identified the non-compliance with TFMA and SEM policy and procedure, as well as the trade regulation and practice notes. The value of the contract is 218 million and 325 million. The anticipated end date of the proclamation of this investigation is 29 March 2024. Then in terms of the outcome, there's a possible criminal referrals that we are considering, and civil SIU is considering to set aside the contract on grounds of legality and possible recovery. And on this aspect also, quantification is still ongoing. An administrative action, one former board member, that is membership, was withdrawn and fine imposed by SALCA, and SIU is considering the CICC referral against the company directors. And disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make it because all the officials left the employment of SAA. However, we will consider them when we do the civil proceedings. In terms of focus area number five, we look at the component support services. Here is tender irregularities in awarding the component support bid and corruptive relationship and payments between third party and SAA and SAT employee and board members. The finding is that we have identified SEM and tender irregularities on this contract. The value of the contract is between 1.2 billion and 1.8 billion. Payments of deposit amount contrary to contract stipulation indicating an irregular letter of credit. Other irregular payments made contrary to the stipulation of the contract. This amount are still being quantified by the accountant, and currently this amount is at 35 million. And corrupt payments between entity, third party, SAA and SAT employee, as well as board member. The flow of these funds for all the related contracts are still being analyzed, as several bank statements were subpoenaed and currently being analyzed. Civil litigation is to be considered, is to be instituted, and the civil claim involved the two legal firms. Then the end date is 30 November 2023. In terms of the outcome, there's a possible criminal referrals of fraud, corruption, and facilitating corrupt payments against approximately 10% that involve companies and individuals. And in terms of civil recovery, we are to institute civil recovery against companies and individuals for a possible amount exceeding 1 billion. Administrative action, membership withdrawn and fine imposed by SALCA against one board member, and there's also possible referrals of evidence against former board member and company director to CIPC for delinquency. And also referrals of evidence of misconduct against three attorneys to the Legal Practice Council. In terms of disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make disciplinary referrals because all the employees left the SAA before we start the investigation. However, this official will be cited in the civil proceeding. In terms of focus area number six, here we look at the paid tender. Here we're looking at the tender irregularities, and the tender irregularities which would include the non-adherence and compliance with the TFMA and SCM policy and treasury regulation and practice notes. And the tender value of this paid tender was 19.2 million. And this investigation is finalized. In terms of the outcome, we have referred criminal referrals to the Hawks. And the referrals include allegation of corruption, which include entities, individuals, and former officials. Then in terms of disciplinary referrals, we couldn't do it because the official left the employment of SAA. Focus area number seven, here we look at the swap transaction. Here it's tender irregularities and contract non-compliance issues relating to acquisition agreement of 2002 sales and leaseback agreement. That is Airbus SAA swap transaction. The finding here is that there is no proof of PDP reinvestment to SAA in full or in part. This amount to 834.24 million, and there is no proof of refund of PDPs to SAA to the value of $103 million, and only $50 million was received by SAA. and there was unauthorized processes relating to the signing of documents pertaining to the amendment of contracts. This had a cost implication for SAA amounting to $47 million, and as well as the security deposit of $26 million, which still needs to be clarified. There was no proof of any reinvestment in relation to maintenance expenditure on the lease aircraft as per the lease agreement between SAA and LESA. Investigation is ongoing in order to determine the reinvestment, whether it has occurred. And the anticipated completion date is 30 April 2024. And in terms of the outcome, criminal referrals, we have referred, or referrals are still under consideration against one official of SAA and one board member. And there's a disciplinary referral, evidence pointing to the act of misconduct against an employee of SAA was referred to SAA in April 2023. And civil recovery, there's a possible civil action to recover $824 million and security deposit. In terms of focus area number 8, cargo aircraft lease, here we're looking at procurement irregularities pertaining to the lease of aircraft. The progress or finding is that addendum to the dry lease contract was found to be irregular as no approval was obtained for the deviation, and the value of the contract is $185 million. And senior counsel was appointed and papers were lodged at the special tribunal in order to set aside the contract and to recover the money lost to SAA. The anticipated date of completion is that the investigation is finalized, it will be finalized by the end of November 2023, and matters will be still pending in the special tribunal, will continue beyond the November 2023. In terms of the outcomes, criminal referrals, we have identified possible criminal referrals against a private entity and SAA official, and civil recovery. Motion papers filed at the special tribunal to set aside the extension of the contract and to recover the $85 million plus interest. And in terms of disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make any because the official left the employment of SAA. However, they will be considered in terms of the civil proceedings. Focus area number 9, we're looking at the security services. Here, the allegation is that there's alleged procurement irregularities in the appointment of a security company and the continuous contract extension since 2005 to date. The outcome is that irregular contract extension, contrary to the TFMA and SEM policy and procedure, as well as the trade regulation and practice note, was identified. And contract was extended 8 times over a 56-month period, and there's an irregular expenditure identified amounting to $953 million for the period February 2008 to January 2020. No effective contract management at SAA or SAT, and there was non-adherence to AXA licensing cycles. Here, the investigation will be finalized on the 31st of December 2023. In terms of the outcome, evidence pointing to the act of misconduct against an employee of SAA was referred to SAA during May 2023. And civil recovery, no civil recovery at this stage. Consideration will be made after receiving 2 outstanding affidavits. That's when we'll decide whether we take the contract to court so that we can debate it irregular or not. Then in terms of criminal referrals, there's a possible criminal referral against 7 SAA officials. Then focus area number 10, that is OEM approved avionic parts. That is alleged irregular procurement, overpricing, conflict of interest, and overpayment relating to this contract. Here the investigation is ongoing and the value of the contract is $5 billion, and payments exceed the budget and contract amount,
and also the finding that there are no procurement documents for this contract, and we have requested information from the service provider team to pursue the conflict of interest investigation based on allegation that employee who signed off the RFQ is in the owner of the company that was awarded the tender, and this investigation will end in 31 December 2023. In terms of the outcome to be determined on the completion of the investigation, and civil recovery, also the outcome will be determined together with the disciplinary referrals will be determined once we finalize the investigation. In terms of focus area number 11, here we're looking at the provision of transport services, that is irregularities pertaining to the appointment of cabin crew transport, the contract extension and possible misrepresentation in the executing of the contract. The progress here is that the investigation is completed. There was utilization of different evaluation criteria during the scoring processes, and we identified irregularities during the evaluation, and there was irregular extension of contracts, and there was pricing error within the contract. There was misrepresentation regarding the vehicle ownership and the financial application on the irregular extension of the contract, close to 800.5 million, and there was a breach of contract. The breach of contract implies that a possible amount of 6.4 million could be recovered for the period of February 2019 to August 2020. The investigation is finalized in terms of the outcome. Evidence pointing to fraud, theft and corruption has been referred to NPA to the value of 85 million. And civil recovery, SIU is finalizing referrals to civil litigation unit within the SIU. And disciplinary referrals, we couldn't do any referrals because the official left the employment of SAA when we started the investigation. However, responsible official will be considered when we do the civil proceeding. In terms of focus area number 12, we're looking at the provision of aircraft battery cells contract. Here we're looking at alleged irregular procurement process and possible overpricing. The investigation is ongoing, and the three-year contract was budgeted at 11 billion, and the 2016-2017 year was budgeted at 6 million. The actual expenditure for 2017 was 22.2 million. And for 2018 was 32.8 million. An advance payment was made to the company contrary to approved policies. A number of payments were processed in terms of RFQ, yet the amount exceeds the approved threshold. The anticipated end date for the proclamation is 28 February 2024. In terms of the outcome, there's a possible criminal referrals of fraud, corruption against individual and company, and civil recovery, we are to institute civil recovery, and currently we're still waiting for the participation process, and disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make it because official left, however this official will be cited during the civil proceedings. Focus area number 13, we're looking at the provision of transport services. Here we're looking at the alleged irregularities pertaining to the appointment of cabin crew transport, the contract extension and the possible misrepresentation in executing the contract. Here the finding is that there was irregular scope change occurred during the contract period, and the approved amount for the period 1 March 2016 to 31 October 2016 was 3.6 million. But 21.3 million was paid, and there's a possible irregular payment of 15 million. And the investigation is still ongoing, and in terms of the outcome, we have made, there's a possible one criminal referral to be made to NPA once the investigation is finalized, and the possible settlement with a private entity and referrals to the Special Tribunal for the recovery of the amount is still to be finalized once the quantification is done. Disciplinary referrals, there's possible 7 DC referrals to be made to SAA. In terms of focus area number 14, we're looking at the supplier's development contract. Here the allegation is that one SAT board member took a loan of 800 million from one of the suppliers of SAT in exchange for contract. In terms of the progress, it will appear that an amount of 700 billion was transferred from one attorney's bank account to the supplier in question, and on 15 July 2016 and on 29 July 2016, the same supplier paid 700,000 and 119,000 respectively into a bank account of a company owned by a member of the board. On analysis of such expenditure reports, the supplier has been paid a total of 6.1 billion from such purchase order, and contra bank details still to be determined, as it seems that the attorney's firm was involved in channeling some of the funds between different company accounts. An investigation is still ongoing. We anticipate that this investigation will be finalized on the 30th of July 2024. Then in terms of the outcome, criminal referral, there's a possible referral of evidence relating to the facilitation of corrupt payments to the NPA. And civil recovery, there's a possible referral to the Special Tribunal for the recovery of irregular RSQ amounts. And administrative action, SAICA referrals, and section 173 of the Companies Act is to be made. And there's a possible referral also to the LTC, and disciplinary referrals could not be made because the official left the employment of SAA. Then in terms of focus area number 15, here we're looking at working capital optimization contract. Here it is alleged that irregular ACM process of SAT lost benefits from the re-evaluation of the stock. Here the finding is that the investigation is ongoing. The value of the contract is 22 million. Bid was submitted late and should have not been considered by SAT. The same bidder was also privy to information not shared with other bidders. High value stock items were reported to be absolute and sold at a reduced or minimum value. The team is considering the allegation that such bought or leased the same item at exorbitant price. And another contract for the design of the organizational structure and alignment of management capability is under consideration. The investigation will be finalized on the 31st of December 2023. In terms of the outcome, criminal referrals, we have referred a criminal referral against former employee of SAT in April 2023 to NTA. And civil recovery, SIU is facilitating the reimbursement of 14 million contracts to SAA. Then in terms of disciplinary referrals, we couldn't prepare any DC because the official left, however, they will be cited in the civil proceeding. For criteria number 16, we're looking at the catering services. Here it's alleged that the former SAA board chairperson interfered with the tender process. And the progress is that on the 14th of August 2015, after a completion of tender process, a tender for the provision of catering services at the O.R. Tambo International Airport launch was awarded to the value of 85 million for a period of 3 years. When the board was advised of the award and the impact it would have on one SAA subsidiary who had been servicing the lounge, the chairperson of the board instructed that the appointment be cancelled on the 3rd of September 2015 and the services be reinstituted with the subsidiary That is the company that was providing the service all along. And on the 9th of October 2015, a board resolution was taken in which the award was cancelled and the service awarded to the subsidiary company without going through the tender process was done. And the investigation is finalized in terms of this aspect. We currently tying up the loose end, of which it will be finally finalized on the 30th of November 2023. In terms of the outcome, we are considering the criminal referral is under consideration for the loss suffered by SAA as a result of the board unlawful decision, and civil recovery is under consideration for the loss suffered by SAA as a result of the board unlawful decision. And currently we're busy with the quantification process. And disciplinary referrals, we couldn't make any referrals because all the board members left and the official left. However, they will be considered if we proceed with the civil litigation. Focus area number 17, here we're looking at the provision of legal services. It is alleged that there was a conflict of interest in the awarding of tenders and there was corruption and facilitation of corrupt payments. In terms of the finding, the investigation is still ongoing and implicated in other investigations as SAA staff and board members were paid through the firm and businesses and trust account. This payment seems to have been corrupted payments which flow from some of the tenders awarded to the entities. And flow of funds has been, as indicated, a possible 71 million that was facilitated through attorney's bank account. And we're still waiting a number of bank account statements in order to quantify the or to follow the payments. And the matter is linked to a number of focus areas because this legal practice was used in all other focus areas. And the anticipated end date is 31st December 2023. In terms of the outcome, criminal referrals, there's a possible referral of evidence relating to the facilitation of corrupt payments to NPA against the firm and its director and other individuals. Civil recovery, we are to institute civil recovery against companies, individuals, and the value is still to be identified, to be determined. Administrative action, one former board member's membership was withdrawn and fine was imposed by SAICA, and we are considering three LPC referrals and two CITC referrals against company directors. And disciplinary referrals action against one SAA member was done. Then focus area number 18, here we're looking at the ground handling tender. Here there's an allegation of irregular procurement processes followed an alleged corruption. The investigation is ongoing. We found that the procurement process was not followed in the procurement of the ground handling tender, and we've identified the corrupt payments. And here the investigation will be finalized on the 31st January 2024. In terms of the outcome, there's a possible referral of evidence relating to the facilitation of corrupt payments to NTA. And civil recovery, we are to institute civil recovery against the company and individual, and the value is still under consideration. And disciplinary referrals, no action could be taken because the official left the employment of SAA. However, they will be cited during the civil proceeding. In terms of focus area number 19, we're looking at the provision of cleaning services. Here it is alleged that there was a conflict of interest and fictitious work order and payments made without a valid contract, and the investigation is still ongoing. The investigation team has requested the documentation relevant to the procurement of the contract. Only few documents provided. And the team is engaging SAA in order to obtain other outstanding documentation. Currently, the service provider is on a month-to-month contract for the cleaning services after the contract period. And the investigation will end on the 31st of March 2024. The outcome, all the outcome will be determined after the investigation has been completed. Focus area number 20, we're looking at the travel rebate. Here, SAA top 12 employees frequently travels to Hong Kong, whereas there was an embargo which restricted travels between 1 April 2017 and 31st October 2018. Here, the investigation has been completed and we could not find any irregularities in the process of allocation or utilization of the rebate. And travel rebates were done in accordance with SAA concession policy that was applicable at the time. There are possible non-VAT declarations that we have identified. In terms of the outcome, no criminal, no civil, no disciplinary. However, we have drafted, we are busy drafting a referral to SARS against 12 employees so that SARS can be able to look at their VAT issue. Focus area number 21, aircraft brakes and tire. Here we're looking at potential overpricing of brakes and tire and also the issue of sole sourcing. Here the investigation is still ongoing. The investigation team has established that the service provider is the sole source of trademarks, brakes and tire. The investigation team has requested remittance account from SAT to establish potential overpricing. And the investigation is still ongoing, will be finalized on the 31st of December 2023, and all the outcome will be determined when the investigation is finalized. Focus area number 22, fleet maintenance on SAT and SAA vehicles. Here we're looking at poor service rendered on maintenance of vehicles and potential overpricing. Here the investigation is still ongoing. Investigation team have reviewed procurement documents, however, some procurement documents are still outstanding. Investigation team has requested the job cuts from SAT and remittance account. The investigation will be finalized on the 31st of December 2023 and the outcome will be determined once the investigation is finalized. Focus area number 23, provision of technical spare and components parts. Here we look in that SAA paid the supplier $70 million for a part that they previously bought for $8 million from UK-based company. It is further alleged that the supplier is a brother of former SAA employee. The investigation is still ongoing. The investigation team has requested declaration of interest of former SAA employee and supplier integrity packs of the supplier. Purchase history of the part and the bank statement have been requested, so the investigation is still ongoing and the outcome will be determined when the investigation is finalized. Focus area number 4, we're looking at maladministration. That is, after finalizing the key focus area of the investigation, the SIU will conduct maladministration and governance review in order to identify the following: the cause of the failure of the governance structure and the SAA, the individual responsible for the failure, how the failure contributed to the position of the SAA today, accountability of responsible officials, make a systemic recommendation on identifying governance issue after the entire process, and thereafter we'll make a referral after we've determined whoever is responsible for the failure of the governance at the SAA. Implementation of the recommendation of the Judicial Service of Commission of Inquiry. The SIU has considered the state capture report relating to SAA and it is implementing its recommendation and it's working in collaboration with other law enforcement agencies. The following matters are under investigation. In terms of the report, the SIU is investigating the following 10 matters covered by the current proclamation, and the matters are currently under investigation. And of the 10 matters, 4 matters have been finalized, and the outcome achieved on finalized matter includes 2 referrals to NPA, 2 disciplinary referrals, and 8 matters are currently being reviewed for civil recovery to the value of 2.3 billion. This slide outlines the summary of outcomes. I'm not going to go through each. You can see rent value of potential cash, recovered is 3.4 billion and rent value of actual cash and assets recovered is 14 million and rent value of potential loss prevented is 130 million. The number of referrals made for disciplinary action is 3 and number of referrals made for to relevant prosecuting authority is 6. And you see at the last that we are busy currently drafting a interim presidential report to be submitted to the president. Then coming to the observation. In terms of the observation, due to the state capture, some member of the accounting authority, including ex-official member, failed in their fiduciary duty to properly manage the financial affairs of the institution. The SIU found that some of the board members benefited from the corrupt payment facilitated by at least two legal firms. And these payments are linked to a number of tenders awarded by SAA or SARS. And all this contributed to the collapse of government within the SAA and within SARS. Then in terms of new allegations that we have received, SIU received new allegations relating to Takato deal, and it's undergoing SIU internal process in terms of assessing whether the matter is covered by the current prosecution. And SIU has made requests for information to various sources that includes the Competition Commission, the Auditor General, and the Department of Public Enterprise in order to assess and motivate for the prosecution. And information is being packaged and is to be submitted soon from various of those entities. And SIU also indicated previously in SCOPA that we have also received the allegations regarding the use of SAA craft to fetch vaccine from Brussels during the 2021, and that no process was followed for the utilization of the aircraft. And in terms of this matter, to date, we have not received sufficient documentation, and we have decided to temporarily close this matter until we receive documentation, then we can be able to move on with this matter. Then in terms of project risk, most of SA staff members were stretched, and no handing over of critical documents was done. It has been extremely difficult to obtain contract information from SAA, and the mitigating effect is steps is that the interim CEO is assisting the SIU to retrieve some of the documentation. Thank you. That is all.
Well, thank you, Mr. Khetto. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Honorable Members, just to close, it's clear that the investigation has been so focused, and as we continue to review investigations internally, we found that it's been very complex as well. There have been risks that we face in terms of obtaining documentation, but the management there, in particular the CEO, has assisted in the process for us to get documentation, and that's why we were able to progress some of the investigations. As the Honorable Committee can see, so the focus really in terms of this maladministration, corruption, just procurement. And if you just go to slide, I think slide 28, which is the summary. We're making a summary there on slide 28 around rent value of potential cash and or assets to be recovered. That's at the top. This is at the time of this presentation, it counts up to 3.4 billion, and that's various contracts. And as you could have picked up in the investigation, there's some of the losses that are still being quantified by the investigating teams. So that amount will probably spike. And as we quantify it, we then hand over to the civil litigation team to ensure that processes are followed to recover it. And as you can see there, the next one is really money that has already been recovered. But the third line is matters that now will be enrolled in the special tribunal. We're looking for more matters to be enrolled as the investigations are finalized. What was the point. My colleague kept on saying, you know, the employees who left SAA, you know, could not be, disciplinary processes could not be referred. This really is a phenomenon that was really identified long time ago and indicated to the Honorable Committee before. And as we say in other areas, that they will be cited in civil proceedings, but they will also be followed through criminal processes. But what we will do also, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, is to identify the employees who left, and then so that management is aware of who they are, so that there's no risk of re-employment. It's going to be very critical that they are identified and handed over to management. The possibility of re-employment should not arise, because they've really caused so much harm, including the accounting authority. As we've indicated in the presentation, we will be making recommendations for delinquency referrals of the previous board members. Thank you.
Good, thank you very much. I'm part of this would explain the disclaimers. Chairperson, we'll now come to the SAA presentation done by the CEO. Okay. CEO, over to you.
Honourable Chairman of SCOPA and Honourable Members of the Committee, Chairperson of South African Airways, the Deputy Minister, the Acting Director General, and my colleagues from the SIU as well as from AXA. A Chairperson is always an opportunity we take with much seriousness to be able to present them to your committee. I'm accompanied by my colleague, the Executive Director, the CFO, who will in particular assist in addressing the question might arise on the issue of the non-provision to the auditors of the financial statements of the South African travel centers, as well as the SAA Employee Share Trust financials. General Chairperson, in our presentations to SCOPA, we stick to the brief and the questions that have been raised, but within the context of today, please allow us, by way of introduction, to state that the current SAA is an organization in transition. We have inherited, or we have an organizational development approach that sees the life of SAA mutating through three phases. The first phase is what we call SAA version 1 that we have inherited since May 2021, which was immediately as SAA got out of business rescue. That SAA version 1 is an SAA that carries a reputational image of what we call the Zondo Commission era of SAA, as well as the business rescue SAA. The business rescue element speaks to the financial deterioration in terms of the management of SAA that occurred at least from the year 2011. The last time SAA published a positive financial statement was in 2012. And as the auditors have indicated, since then SAA has had a series of disqualified audits. And that speaks to how SAA dwindled into the business rescue that happened on the 5th of December 2019. We took South African Airways on with the leadership of the shareholders when a new board and a new management was established in 2021, with the airline flying from September 2021. And we styled this SAA version 2, but this SAA version 2 consciously was structured as an organization in transition to what will be SAA version 3, namely an SAA which out of the diagnosis that was done, that for SAA to be SAA, it has to be a company that is dependent, self-dependent in terms of the financial ability, and not be dependent on the fiscal anymore, and that is powered by the most agile and best practices in airline management. Therefore, the requirement of the introduction of a private and strategic equity partner. And we have managed SAA in preparation and in transition of the institution of this SAA version 3, which we believe will or should deliver an SAA that is well capitalized and strong enough to retain the market share that SAA has lost since it went into business rescue in 2019. As such, Chair, SAA is an organization that is in a workshop. It's an organization that is being fixed and an organization that is being rebuilt. And in that context, Chairperson, we have appreciated the interaction of the AGSA as they conducted their audit. We have had very difficult conversations with them in trying to get them to understand the context of the two eras that they were dealing with, the legacy. We are trying to rebuild the USA. But of course, the rules of accounting and audit demanded them to look at the SAA of the past through the lenses of the SAA of the present. So we put on record that we appreciate the criticism and the findings of the AGSA. And the board, as well as management, have been supplied with audit findings reports. And a commitment has been made that all the remedial plans have to be put in place, and we are currently working on that. Similarly, Chair, the issue, the connection, which leads us into the second issue of our relationship with the SIU, is the identification by the audit, by the external auditors of the consequence management within SAA. In tandem, Chair, we have inherited, of course, this not only a load of specific cases as have been articulated and enumerated to the committee, but we have a culture currently at SAA, or since 2020, late 2021, of an SAA that is in a state of investigation. We have on a daily basis the work of the SIU, the work of the office. We are seeking in re-employing the staff to ensure that we employ people who are committed to the values of the SAA version 2, and who will assist us in ensuring that the mistakes of the past are not repeated. And along that, Chairperson, we as the board and management, we have also been somehow impatient with the rate at which the SIU is operating, without of course seeking to interfere with the rigorous and the independence that they need to have in that investigation. To that end, in September 2021, or 2 months ago, myself and the chairperson of the board met with the relevant people at the SIU to just underline the obsession of the board of SAA and the executive management to have in most of these cases brought to a close and for us to work in a more efficient way. And in a very peculiar manner, Chair, we also decided to contribute to the capacitation of SIU. The airline industry is very complicated, and most of the work that the SIU was investigating on is the issue of the legacy disagreement, how SAA was acquiring aircraft, stock transactions, and so on.
we organized and flew to South Africa, a special training course by IATA, the IATA, the famous International Air Transportation Association, trainers to train some SIU or SIU investigators as well as our senior executives on an international course on the aircraft acquisition and financing.
Chair, we have indeed been receiving cases for referral. Currently, we have about three referral cases that have been concluded involving senior managers coming from the SIU. We have also been able to cancel one notorious contract. And we have sought from the SIU to be alerted of those service providers who we should be able to eschew from our procurement processes, since we cannot blacklist any service providers, as that is the task of the purview of National Treasury while the investigations are going on. An impartial response, Chair, to the presentation by the HSA. Indeed, one of the greatest challenges that SAA has is the capacity of critical skills, in particular in the finance department. The root matter of this, Chair, is that besides what has happened during business rescue, as the organization in the public domain is known to be in transition to a new controlling shareholder, SAA is having a difficulty in attracting qualified professionals, particularly in the finance space, who of course cannot be assured of long-term security of employment. As we all know that when a shareholder comes in, put in their money, the first thing they look at is at the purse and they want their own people to control that purse. In tandem, Chair, we institutionally, the organization in recent times has become stronger. We have a new board, but besides having a board, Chair, we have a board that is more capacity in terms of the numbers of board members. For the first time since we start, we have an audit, risk and governance committee that has been functioning very fiercely and efficiently, and the other statutory committees that have been requested. We report quarterly to the shareholder executive authority as is prescribed by the relevant prescripts of the PFMA, and an executive authority together with the office of the Director General have really in this recent financial year strengthened and sharpened their supervision of the management of the company. We receive at the end of each quarter what is called investor review letters, where a number of matters are brought to our attention for dealing with. Moving in, Chair, to the brief of the requested meeting, to just preface it by saying that nearly all state-owned entities, South African Airways is very unique in that it is not a monopoly to begin with, and it is operating on one of the most competitive industries in the world, with a very frequent economic KPIs or performance goals, very slow margins, and it's a very expensive business. A recent announcement, for instance, this week that I can mention Emirates Airlines has committed a capital expenditure of 52 billion rand just to deal with one aspect of their fleet renewal program. $52 billion dollars for the chairperson is nearly a trillion rand, which has been put and committed by a state in keeping its airline. That pales to some degree to a point raised in the AGA's a review of the history of SAA of about 29 billion rand that has been invested in SAA currently. And as we move forward, Chairperson, we are very conscious in the current mission of SAA, that the new SAA, resized as it is, must be able to stand on its own and keep the pride of South Africa as a national carrier, defending the brand and related assets that SAA has. The performance chair to date has been constrained or affected by the constrained and domestic economy in South Africa, as well as the structural changes that have happened in the airline industry in South Africa. We have a situation in South Africa currently, for instance, where it is possible for international airlines to fly straight from their foreign places, to fly straight into Cape Town, fly straight into Durban, whereas pre-COVID, this tourists will first fly into Johannesburg, and then South African Airways, as well as the local airlines, will then transport them across the country. So these structural changes have really affected South African Airways, and as we are approaching even the peak season, now in December, it will be a different December than the kind of December that we have had even next year. Overall, it is good for the country. It is good that our tourism numbers are rising, and we have a new hub, which is Cape Town, and SAA is also now revising our strategy. As you will have noted, Chair and members, that we launched our first intercontinental flight to Sao Paulo, Brazil, out of Cape Town, which was historic in the whole 90-year history of South African Airways. And we will be having other interconnecting flights that will be flying out of Cape Town. To come to the issue about the operational and commercial performance of the company recently, starting with that number two. So
okay, could we take it as a red chair in the interest of time?
Yeah, we've got people who don't have the presentation and the stream, so. Proceed. Okay, card copies will be made available.
So I apologize for that, Chairperson. Slide six starts with on the fleet update. The South African Airways launched by the end of the first year of operation, which ended on the 1st March 2022. Which the auditors referred to, we were flying only six aircraft that we launched with, plus an aircraft that we put into service that we own. Only seven aircraft. By December 2022, the airline grew to about nine aircraft that we are flying. And currently, Chairperson, we are flying 13 aircraft. But of these 13 aircraft, this marks a very serious challenge that we are having, namely that there is a global constraint in the supply chain of aircraft. And we started the financial year with a particular plan that would have a certain number of aircraft, and we have not been able to procure that aircraft, which has led us to a very daunting challenge at SAA management, where for the first time we had to adulterate, so to speak, the brand of SAA, where we had to use short-term aircraft that are wet leased under the method of leasing in the industry called ACMI. We currently have four aircraft which we have leased for a short-term period ranging between 4 to 10 months, which aircraft are stopgap as we are awaiting about four to five aircraft that have been approved by the executive authority and National Treasury that SAA can lease.
underlining, Chairperson, that all SAA is flying this aircraft, and all these aircraft are financed from the operations, from the revenue that SAA accrues from these operations. And there are very strict governance approval processes before the leases are entered into. All the leases beyond 3 years are subject to a PFMA Section 54 application that goes through rigorous. The application is sent to the Minister of Transport, the Minister of National Treasury, as well as the PPD, under the signature of the chairperson of the board, after it has been scrutinized by the Financial Investment Committee of the company. As we look into the new financial year, that will be financial year starting from April 2024 to March 2025, the corporate pledge has been presented to the board of SAA, and looks forward to SAA flying 21 aircraft. In this 21 aircraft, Chairperson, are matched with a plan of flying a number of routes, and on the slide number 4, in summary, we depict how this expansion of SAA through the routes is matched to this fleet acquisition that we are making. By the end of the last financial year, we were flying 12 destinations, with the primary focus being in the regional market, which is the Africa market. And the reason why Chile is focused on the regional market is because the yields on the regional market are higher than in the domestic market. And secondly, South African Airways is the only airline in South Africa that has the capacity of wide-body aircraft that can do long-haul emissions, and therefore enable South African Airways to execute its national mandate of linking South Africa with its trade partners and the tourism market. To that end, we managed in November to open one of our first intercontinental airlines, routes to Brazil. That was a major step in that announced to the global aviation industry that South African Airways is back, and currently studies are underway for a second intercontinental route. We have also recently launched a route to Abidjan. And on the domestic market, where we have two routes, the pressure has been there, and we have considered according to our market study to start the Trebekha route, which will be started seasonally during this coming peak season. All in all, currently we are flying 15 routes, and the aim is to proceed to where at the end of this financial year, March 2024, we will be flying a total of 20 destinations. Chair, South African Airways version 2 moving into version 3 is in a very unique and tight financial management mandate, in that since we are not dependent on any external financial resources, we are very careful in as to which route we choose, where we fly, and unless a route is profitable on the desktop study, we do not initiate it. And now I can assure the committee that the routes that are shown here are the routes on which very serious studies have been conducted, that they can be done and completed. We have planned to complete all of them by the end of this financial year. There will be a slide that will show the next financial year. That being on the routes, on the financial performance, so on the commercial performance of the business, Jefferson. The next issue about the tabling of the annual report. The annual report has said, according to our understanding, Chairperson, with the four sets of the financial
statement that have been audited will be presented to the relevant parliament committee by the executive authority in due course. An AGM was held on the 10th of November, where all the financial statements have been presented and they are ready for that parliamentary process. The business rescue of Mango continues a chairperson, and the board is on its toes with the management to ensure that this Mango business rescue process comes to a close as soon as possible for the benefit of all the stakeholders involved. Much has been said about the audit chairperson. If you permit, just move to the next issue. The financial performance, doing it at high level, if we were doing the actual annual financial report, my colleague, the CFO, will be taking on here. But allow me to just say, chairperson, that as I indicated, we are into a financial year. Things are going well, but are not going as fast as we had planned because of the constraints in the processes of securing the kind of aircraft that we need. Both passenger and cargo revenues are lower than budget because of that reason. However, the upside of the downside is that our costs are contained since we are not spending the money that we had planned to spend on aircraft leases, etc. Hence, yet today, the EBITDA is also not a concern as such for now. The current cash position of the company is positive, and we are confident that by the end of this financial year, where the FAA will have adequate cash from its operation, including the balance of the proceeds from the closure of the VRP process. Chair, the business rescue process is technically concluded in the sense that the receivership that was put in place was planned to be serviced through three tranches of payment every August since 2021. The last tranche has been executed on August 2023. The 1 billion rand that was received from the National Treasury in April of this year has been paid out to all the creditors that have been waiting for 3 years to get the balance of what they've been owned or according to the business rescue plan that was published then in 2021. What is still outstanding, which we are working on with the DPE and National Treasury, is the contingent legal liability on the unflown tickets, what we call the UTL, that dates from August 2019. When SAA was shut down for about 18 months, there were people all over the world, in various jurisdictions. Some of these jurisdictions have very harsh consumer protection laws that at SAA we are daily dealing with people claiming tickets that have not been refunded. So even though there is no active demand for this money, but prudent business management enjoins us that we ensure that the quantum of those tickets those ticket payments, those ticket claims anticipated have to be provided for. And that is the funds that normally features when there is talk about SAA being in communication with National Treasury, etc. And finally, Chairperson, not so finally, there was a question on employees. As the members will have seen from the slide, the South African Airways is 4,700 employees. We have currently 1,007 employees. By the end of the financial year, there were only 999 employees.
were committed, Chair, to keep the numbers around that line, sadly, because as we know that one of our mandates in economic development should be job creation. Where we are in ambition, Chair, or we hope that SAA grows, we'll be able to employ more people. We are under a covenant agreement with the Competition Tribunal that South African Airways will keep its current employment to a particular level. And our hiring practices are currently governed by that, where we only employ critical skills, which is good for SAA, which is a good indication of the trust that the aviation community at SAA. We have recently been able to recruit 37 additional pilots in a very competitive market where these pilots are very precious skill sets in South Africa. Is being poached by airlines all over the world who are growing more aggressively than us. But we've been able to have 87 of new pilots employed at SAA in the last few weeks, I can say. Finally, moving on, Chairperson, on the matter which strictly is managed in the hands of the shareholder, the PPE, which is the conclusion of the disposal process, where we as the management of SAA are supporting the processes that should ensure the speedy closure of this transaction, as we believe that the sooner it is concluded at good time, the good it will be for South African Airways from our understanding of the airline as professionals in the global airline industry. Where we are currently is the issue of the aviation regulatory process, where the International Air Services Licensing Council and the Domestic Licensing Council are of the view that some amendment to the Air Services Air Operators Certificate of SAA will have to be applied for as the new controller take over SAA. Well, there's a whole process of work that has been prepared in that respect. The Chair will be aware that the amendment for the repeal of the SAA Act of 2007 is on course, and beyond that, Chair, is the daily work that is done by the lawyers and the various experts on ensuring that all the conditions precedent are attended to. Our understanding and preparation is that at some point the actual transfer of shares to the Takato Aviation will be signaling the change of control for SAA. And until that moment, as the Chairperson had indicated, the accounting authority with us as executive management delegated are running South African Airways with the best care and with the best care in terms of governance and legislative prescriptions, but also the operational safety standards that are demanded of international airlines and our other corporate citizens with responsibility as a company.
Thank you very much to NG. As for you, this is a
good question, but I think the SAA and the department must provide clarity on the key question of the very bold statement which was made by the minister. He said, no money, no deal. The money must be on the table. Because all these things we are saying insofar as the SDP are concerned, I comment on that. Because I think that is the issue of clarity. So I think we need to know, is the money forthcoming? because I think it would be wholly pointless to hang on to a bill whose reality is centered around finances. And if the finances are not there, then we need a new course of action. This matter has gone on for far too long. For me, all that has been said, and I thank AG for completing the audit that is now underway with the current latest audit. Thank you very much. And I know that nobody usually thanks us, but I want to thank you, colleagues, for your relentless pressure on this matter and your focus on to make sure that you keep this matter on the oversight and accountability radar. And I know that generally we don't pay the fish for swimming, but I think in this case we've done well. So, Chair, that's the question. Where is the money for the SDP ticket? That's the alpha and omega of this conversation. Honorable Matter, then we'll come to Honorable Matter. Please put your full set of questions, because we were very kept by that we had great presentations, so it's from a time management perspective. Honorable Matter, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll try our best. But the issue of full set of questions is very problematic. And this exercise is not to tick a box, but to make sure that accountability is being open. I want to first go to AG and get an understanding of the figures. You are giving us 44.5 billion as a loss over the past years, but irregular expenditure, and then there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the past years that SAA has not been submitting its financials. Now I want you to help us understand in relation to what the SIU is reporting, because currently the SIU is reporting 3.4 billion in civil litigations, which could by next week or by the end of the month or whatever time could increase based on the information that they are still waiting for. And now I want to understand from you on the issue of what the department is doing in order to recoup the difference. Because the auditing cannot only end at this is what happened and we're leaving. But we must get an understanding from the Auditor General that as far as SAA is concerned, out of whatever was the loss, we're able to recoup so much. The SIU is responsible for so much. However, we are losing so much that cannot be traced at all. That must be clear, and it is your duty to tell us that. We can't just leave it like that. We must be able to understand which are the life, which are the dead, which are the non-recoupables, so that we are able as Parliament to know what to do. And SIU, or as well AG, before I go to SIU, as well AG, we need your understanding on the Takatsu deal. Because there are no financial statements. Therefore, you cannot then put a price on SAA when you do not know how much it costs. And if you are putting a figure to SAA and you are selling it up for sale, is informed by what? And how is that making sense to the asset of the state? And it's you who are is going to be able to tell us if that is possible. Now, SIU, you are reporting on many things. I won't do them one by one. A similar question to what I've posed to the AG in terms of the 3.4 billion, which you are able to litigate civilly, and whatever is coming up. But I'm not sure if you have cases that you have not reported on. I think you've reported on what, 18 cases. Are there any more cases that you haven't reported on which you are investigating in terms of what was reported to you by SAA or by the state-owned entities department? Then to SAA, the first one, I think everyone who spoke on behalf of SAA started with there is a tribunal, a commission tribunal agreement that employees will not be retrenched. And I can tell you now that that's not true. But there is also a qualification that in the first 2 years, that's not going to happen. And then after 2 years, anything can happen. That's number one. You are qualifying it yourself. You are conceding that in the first 2 years. So after 2 years, anything can happen. So we're selling the soul of the state, and at the same time, we don't care what happens to the employees after 2 years. Anything can happen to them. But even within the 2 years, because in terms of the labor laws, there isn't a solid finding when it comes to agreement based on employment. They can renege and say, we don't have money, therefore we have to retreat. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can go back and forth with court and everything. There is no study or outcomes of courts that are solid in terms of you cannot change your agreement as an employer or between your or a new shareholder or whatever. But in this case, as SAA, and if the new partner comes, says, no, we are not going to afford these people, and therefore we are not affording them, therefore they must go, there's nothing you can do about it. And I do not think it's fair to say, no, there is an agreement and we must sit here in Parliament and be ignorant to think that the first 2 years and that agreement is a solid ground for us to agree to such. We will not agree to such. But then the chair has started asking this question of, where is the money? But the where is the money question is based on, how much did you sell SAA for? The secret is not going to help. How much did you sell it for? Based on what? How did you quantify the price? Because the past 4 years we didn't know what was happening in terms of the financials of the SAA. Therefore you cannot then say you are in a process of this and that, then there's secrecy in that. Because we're talking about a state entity. But interestingly, the question becomes, CEO, at the current juncture you are operating at a full scale, it doesn't matter how many aircraft you have, and you are operating with the pace of the state, functioning fully well, why do you want to sell instead of growing internally? Why do you want to sell? That question must be answered. Which then puts employees and even the infrastructure and the company itself at risk, where we are not even going to be a factor. They are even saying we are going to sell it for 51%. That means we have no deciding vote they will decide on our behalf of what must happen. And that on its own should be a common sense factor, that people are going to own 51% at the same time we can impose to them that keep our people for 2 years. It's not going to happen. Because they are going to be majority. The last one, CEO, on the operations. I hear you are talking about new operations that you've launched, which is a good thing. We want the SAA back and it must operate all the routes. But there is something you are not addressing, the aircraft. You are not you touch it and then you leave it. You are not explaining to us you have so many aircraft, you are leasing so many aircraft, because previously, which was mainly the factor that was contributing to a huge loss in the SAA, was the issue of aircraft that were being leased, maintained, and everything, even those corrupt deals of tenders of people of maintenance and electricity were as a result of those aircraft. What's the status of the aircraft in SAA? How many do you have? How many can you buy? How many are you leasing? What is the operational cost and all of those things in regard to that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the for the presentations. Mr. Chairman, I must say I'm a little bit disappointed that the chair of the interim board, as opposed to the interim chair, is not here in the captain's uniform. That that someone in his and our dual past came to a meeting of Parliament wearing. And I once held up a memo in Parliament that he had drafted. It was a secret cabinet memo. The same man who arrived in the captain's uniform once. So, but perhaps it's the right thing that you're not in the captain's uniform, and you're not. That's because you would probably frighten all us passengers away if we thought we might get you flying us somewhere. Mr. Chairman, let's get to some serious questions. As someone across there might remember, I'm just a bookkeeper, and I'm now totally confused, when it comes to the funding that was appropriated by Parliament for the business rescue process. The 2.5 billion that was required by the plan, business rescue plan, to deal with the receivership has not been appropriated. Not yet. It hasn't been appropriated. As far as I know, I'm just the bookkeeper, remember, correct? So, but now we've been told that the receivership that needed 2.5 billion rand to resolve has been closed. That money's been paid. And I don't know where that money's come from. Because if SAA has been able to make that kind of profit, because the other assertion made this morning a number of times is there's cash in the bank. Cash flow is good. So this SAA, I don't understand how it can have cash in the bank, have dealt with 2.5 billion rands worth of receivership demands or requirements from the business rescue plan. I don't understand that, so I need an explanation, please. What are the profits of SAA since it restarted in June 2021? So we can do a little bit of arithmetic. Humor this little bookkeeper. I can add, I can subtract, I'm quite good at that. But at the moment, it's not balanced. The other possibility that might make it balanced is that SAA is back in debt. It's not paying its current liabilities. It's borrowed money somehow, using government guarantees perhaps. That's the only way that you could perhaps balance this equation that I'm asking about. So I really do need some help there. And that then leads me, Mr. Chairman, to the annual financial statement. and the AG are having a little chat there. Now I'm going to ask you. I nearly called you the Honourable, but you are Honourable, even if you're not an MP anymore. Hannah Foreman and I were on the Finance Committee for the 2016-17 annual report, which didn't come. And eventually the AG said, to hell with this. There's the financial statements. I'm not waiting any longer. You may recall it. Why do you keep waiting? You've done these reports. Why haven't we got the annual financial statement? The AGM took place on the 10th of November, I think. It's now the 21st, 10 days later. Why have we not seen those annual financial statements? Because most of the questions around here revolve around these finances and trying to deal with it. I know this is not an SAA board issue, because the audit's been done, it's now a ministry issue as to why these haven't been tabled. And maybe the deputy minister will answer. But I'm saying to the AG, help us. Do what you did in 2016-17. I think I've got the year right. I might have got the year wrong. Just give them to us. You did it then. Maybe you got into trouble. I don't know. But we were very grateful to see the numbers and to be able to do the arithmetic and try and get this thing to balance. So that's about that. The elephant of the room, as my colleagues are already talking about, is the whole account of the law. So the requirement from the tribunal, competition tribunal, is for the minority shareholder to withdraw from the deal. That's one of the requirements. There are others. Now, that hasn't happened. And I think this feeds into what others are saying, is that the value of SAA is not 100 rand, of which 51 rand is to be paid for 51% of the share. It's a great deal more. So now I'm a minority shareholder, I think it's called Global, and I've been told, well, give me back the shares up for me. You can't have the shares, I promise you. No. I've got a deal. You want my shares? I think this airline is worth about 10 billion. I'm just flipping, but I should imagine it probably is. I think it's about 10% of that. So that's a billion rand. Pay me a billion rand, I'll forego taking my share. So, my question to you, the AG, is your assessment that it is a going concern. Are you accepting the assumptions made by SAA that it's a going concern? In order to do that, you've got some reservations, which you put there. But I would have thought, for you even to get to that point, you would have done a due diligence as to whether Picasso is able to make the 3 billion rand contribution or not. And whether the state is still going to make any contribution. Because my assertion would be, if SAA is so profitable that they've dealt with the receivership, then as Minister of Finance, I'd say, great stuff, you've taken the responsibility away from me, I'm not giving you any more money. But you're saying it's part of you're accepting the going concern assumption on the basis that there will still be state monies coming in. On what basis are you kind of taking comfort that the state, Parliament, those of us sitting here are going to say, yeah, okay, let's give them some more money. On what basis are you doing that? So I'm putting you a little bit of corner edgy on those two, because I really think that's an important aspect of determining the going concern. Chairman, the SIU is going to try and give me, you will give me a very quick answer, because I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it here on record. I forget the figure, Honourable Mante was talking about 3 point something billion recoveries and so on. Please confirm that all monies recovered through your processes go to the National Revenue Fund and will not go into SAA bank account. And the reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, is because the taxpayers already bailed out in the business rescue plan and much more before that, billions of rand to SAA. So SAA and can't then get a gratuity through the SIU, and then all the creditors and everyone else who had to write off money don't get it. SAA then gets it. The business rescue plan doesn't allow for that. The whole business rescue plan would then collapse if its tenants or its prescripts are not followed. And that brings me then, Mr. Chairman, to the next point. And I don't know who can answer this, because the business rescue plan is something that's made an order of court, and you wouldn't, everyone's going to meet those requirements, including the state. So if we don't meet those, or in some way those requirements aren't met, SAA is back where it was in December 2019. All the creditors, all the liabilities come back. Airlink, for instance, nearly R1 billion having to be written off on ticket sales that were stolen by SAA. It's just one, but there are many others. So the question I have is that if we don't do exactly what the business plan requires and more, I doubt that the creditor would cry if you did more, would the business plan not collapse? And maybe that's the legal question which no one here is qualified to answer. But it's a question I think that needs, and I would have thought the board would know the answer to that, that it's a risk for SAA that the business rescue plan is not followed to the letter or better than the letter. And what are the consequences for SAA if that happens? And so I might not get a full answer to that, Mr. Chairman, but there you are. Mr. Chairman, someone said, I think it was you, CEO, said AXA's in the room. Is AXA in the room? No, didn't you? Who is it? Oh, is that weird? My apologies, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't listening. I promise you I wasn't asleep. People in my constituency watch me carefully, and then they say to me, I saw you on TV, and I say, well, was I picking my nose or sleeping? I was usually doing one or the other, and they just laugh, they catch me up. Mr. Chairman, this is very serious business, but it's important that we treat each other with humility and respect, and I hope I always do that. And sometimes a little bit of humour. So, Mr. Chairman, the two key issues for me here is, how is SAA able to deal with all these financial demands without going heavily back into debt or borrowing money? We've got an assurance from you that the state hasn't paid you any money. So, how is this possible? That's the one issue. The other issue is the question of Kakatso deals. That deal, I think, you said it, Mr. Chairman, actually is finished. I don't know how any deal can be entered into to sell shares for R51, and then you come back 2 years later and say, I'm sorry, you can't have them for R51 anymore. We're going to do a new valuation, and you're going to pay the new valuation again. If I was Takato, I'd say, I better not give any rude signals here. I would say, sorry, sir, or madam, I am sticking to the original agreement. Here's my R51. Give me the shares, please. I've met all my obligations in this deal. So those are two things that I might think are critical, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you know, Chairperson, colleagues, the Deputy Minister, the Chairperson of the Board, AGSA,
checks and the reports, all of them, signal some kind of a trend which ends by sight of a potential new bed, and that new bed is based on how the past has been addressed, looking into the AG's report, which then has brought me into the outlook, starting from section 71 of the PFMA, section 51, 52, 53, 54, all with emphasis on the role of the accounting authority. And then when I look into the current form of the accounting authority, we're talking about interim, and the AG is talking about instability. And that instability even goes deeper into the functionaries executive. And the language which is somewhat captured in those clauses. It's somewhat prejudges on the basis of emphasis that the authority's judicial responsibility must do A, B, C, D, must do that. I've got a problem with a corporate plan, with a corporate plan, moving to the budgets, and looking into what to be referred to the executive authority, the decisions ought to be made. And if you look into that trend currently, on what you have inherited as the existing interim board, becomes a threat which ought to somewhat tell Parliament to give us some kind of a signal. Whether in the current situation are you able to withstand those demands, those specifications, and within those clauses of the PFMA. Whether the observation currently lies squarely to your own fiduciary responsibility on such areas as identified in terms of your own responsibility. I'm asking that question, Chair, with the outlook of a standard creation getting into the new thing. I think that the CEO makes the questions of the SAA blah to blah so looking into the future. So the transition should be strong to the future. If this transition is weak to the future, it means the realization of that future is fragile. So the fragility through that new bond is somewhat seen now. Where are we going to? And the outline of the chapter said earlier on talks about the fact that yes, we can survive without any support from Treasury and all this stuff. But if you look into all those kinds of prescribed authority, it's not obsession, but assertions, they say loudly, what are we supposed to see in this transition to guarantee a future which we want to realize on the strength of what that new bond is going to be. So take the doubt off from us and to say, yes, it's where we are. Your appointment as a board has been some time in May. And we're talking about the interim board, the interim chapters, the interim that's one of the fragility that we're building on in a sense of laying the foundation without determining a firm government, And the AG said the absence of that firm governance has proven into taking us, all of us, the state's investment in this entity to irregularities. So are we leading into the same future? So the executive authority should firmly deal with those matters which ought to a firm base to get into that future. More so when the strategic partnership outlook is not as yet realized. Why are you dealing with things in that kind of a form? Because the strength should be somewhat there on the public plan and the firm ground of good governance in terms of the structure there, and the outlook should be strengthened on the bonded outlook to see that future realized to an extent. The second point is the point that relates to, you have seen the map which as well shows a bit excited, but I had to say, okay, not excitement. Do you still have licenses? Are you still holding on the licenses which could be an angle that motivates you? And when you factor that as part of the corporate plan that you want to make use of the 2021 aircraft, I think 21 aircraft into these number of routes and further into what you are planning now, the upkeep, the servicing of such a license. And the third angle is the angle which is,
I think, Honourable Mande spoke about this thing which says on the employment side, which we have got to check from the CEO as to how are we firming up without involvement of any agents, handling agents.
Involvement of handling agents in your operations. If you choose a route, and you bring in capacity from existing capacity, and therefore you recruit from the employees who have been there who are probably no longer there, rather than the choice of having only handling agents. The men, the seas, are you in the route of attrition of such in terms of your actual fulfillment in getting into these other new routes domestically? Or you want to bring in what you had in terms of the capacity to hold the effectiveness of the SAE. The last area probably to the AGSA, I thought that you see that started recognition. Is firmly saying, here we are, talking about a public entity, a state-owned company, because there's not yet a fulfillment of certain things. I think you highlight a list of those things, that you have an agreement with the entity number of those areas, except for one area which relates to the sourcing process, which should be improved to ensure that it follows a process that is aligned with the requirements of Section 278 of the Constitution. Why do you think that there's no agreement with this? This is constitutional supreme law, which goes into and supported by what I'm referring to in terms of Section 1-2 of the FMA. Why there's reluctance into, adhering into this kind of a requirement in terms of your own assertion going forward on the things that you have listed to be met by the entity. So far, so good. So unfortunately, Nemza, you have inherited this. So give us guarantee that you are a good inheritor. And in that sense, you are marching towards that future with a firm guarantee that South Africans are going to benefit from this and to build an environment free from what the AG is coming up with as a package which you have unfortunately to leave behind and refuse us to the new climate. I really appreciate the power of force to be determined to be going forward in terms of ensuring that we realize the existence of this online. The former glory is of all in the country, but fully good things have to be observed and make our population citizens be happy of that kind of equality. Thank you very much.
I think I must quote correctly what was said, because when you raised the issue of the ability of the consortium to raise the 3 billion rand capital injection required and about what would happen if the Takatso is unable to raise it, the minister indicated in the quote, if that were to occur, there would be no deal. And the Department of Public Enterprises would have to explore other possibilities. So I think I just thought I'd frame it correctly so that we get that clarity. Because what members have raised is crucial. On what basis would the deal have been done and numbers attached to it when the audit was outstanding? Value and you know the whole thing. On what basis did we come to 3 billion rand being required for the deal? What informed that? Because the inverse of it may be, notwithstanding that SAA is operating on a limited scope right now and is re-establishing. And the last time you were here, Chen, you spoke about the nominal profits, the outlook, right? So if SAA is able to set itself on an expansion program beginning with this kind of limited operation and the extensions which the CEO has spoken to, so the incremental introduction of routes, which I think is more business study based than political intervention, and some of the previous interventions of
the lack of me, I still do not know how we cancelled the Johannesburg injury, but when South Africa's got the highest population of Indians outside India. And it follows that I can tell you that without a business case, that they would have been heightened movement from Wales. I know for a fact of the constant movement of Indian communities in between South Africa and India. Now, earlier on I made my persistent plea of the Durban Cape Town route for SAA. And the CEO gave me probably the most impressive pushback I've had in the longest time. And they said, we will not take a political decision, we will take a business decision as a means of demonstrating the movement from that type of decision making. That's important. So having said that,
SAA is going to incrementally, you know, reintroduction of routes without loss of nominal profits and so on. So SAA can recalibrate itself without and so on. Which calls into question then the legitimacy of the deal and its necessity at this point. Because even though one may hold an ideological view about public-private partnerships, it has to be reasonable and rational. You have to do the right thing the right way. Because on the 4th of December, on the eve of the introduction of the business risk practitioners, members here had packed bags preparing to go to SAA the next morning. In fact, one member did not get the late night cancellation when we were informed that a business rescue process was starting and woke up and got ready to be picked up. So in other words, the circumstances of pre the business rescue process and post fundamentally change and alter the discourse of the deal and the numbers and figures on the table if what SAA is telling us. So the flip side of it is 3 billion rand, but is it rational and reasonable and is it consistent with the type of SAA we have right now? To whose benefit is this deal? Is it for SAA or is it for other interests? So I think we have moved so past the circumstances where we were when there was some sort of argument to say, sell. The secrecy of the details not to stand by itself. But right now we want to know, is the 3 billion rands forthcoming, and is the 3 billion rands a fair and competitive figure on the table? Or are we selling for the sake of selling? We've got the SIU here trying to recover monies for you, notwithstanding what Mazambane has said, but there they are. Will you be getting further cash injections? So there's so much layer to this thing. And those are the issues I just wanted to address. Now, are you ready, man? Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. I'm leaving it to you and then I'll get a response from you.
Thank you very much for sharing. All protocol of work. You know what you're talking about, Chairperson? It's so sad because we're asking these questions all the time. I was thinking that as it is a meeting again today, there is something new. Remember, Usomyo asked the question that do we still have the license . You know, when things are like this, so much of money is roaming around where we don't know where it's roaming. You start to fear. You start to fear. Are we going to get this money or not? It's not easy to sit on this committee. There is a lot of questions people they ask in us. Also they need us to answer them. But Chairperson, what I want to say, I'm disappointed. I thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Firstly, thanks to the committee members. I think some challenging questions are put to us, and we appreciate that, because these are not frivolous comments. They're very important comments, and comments that we have to apply our minds to, some which we have, which the Honourable Bookkeeper will be pleased to know when we get to his questions. Before I get to the comments and questions from committee members, I think in the SIU, because it's relevant to the questions, the SIU, Auditor General rather, while appreciating their comments and the work that they're doing, absolutely, and respecting it, I think it could have been updated a little bit. So where it says SAA does not have adequate record-keeping systems, I don't think that's correct. They themselves would be satisfied that the supplier in the past did not have adequate record-keeping systems. I don't believe there's any problem with the current record-keeping systems. Secondly, it also says, in its recommendations to the executive authority, it says it's recommending that they should drive stability at board level. And Honourable Member Sobio, I'll get to your point as well, but there is stability at board level. There's nothing that needs to be driven there. And even the Minister is very satisfied about the functionality, and the Deputy Minister will confirm it. The way the board is functioning, the committees are in place, and there's no stability question. All of the governance structures, Honourable Chairperson, are in place, including for the subsidiaries, which has never been the case, and the board hasn't been the case for many, many years. So all the statutory requirements under the PFMA, of the ARGO, of the FINCO, etc., they're all in place, and for the subsidiaries. Getting to the question, starting with the Honourable Member from the EFF, the SIU can speak more about the 3.4 billion, but there's no... There's a couple of things I want to say about the 3.4 billion. One is that there's no guarantee that this will be recouped. That's one thing where there may be some confusion. There's no attempt, or even there shouldn't be any misunderstanding about recouping past losses. All one can possibly recoup, and as much of it as one can, is the losses occurred or the costs incurred through irregularity or through corruption. And that's the 3.4 billion. The losses over a long period have to be written off. There's no recouping those losses. The only recoup would be if Treasury found, a miraculous 20 billion rand or whatever it is, which is not going to happen. I'll get back to Treasury and some of the questions that you asked there. But hopefully our CFO will make it clearer as well. So the the question about retrenchments, Honourable Member, the tribunal decision is legally binding. So yes, you are right that it's not binding forever. But even as we speak, there's no reduction of workforce, there's expansion of workforce. Every new route that is put in place means additional cabin crew, additional pilots, additional staff members. So at the moment, from having been a substantially reduced workforce, it's a growing workforce, it's a growing number of employees. And all things going well, with the arrangement with the FEP and with the capital injection, it would allow for more growth, not less growth. So there's no reason to, unless one is taking a very pessimistic outlook, to believe that in 2 years beyond the kicking in of the deal with the SEP, the chosen SEP partner, that there'll be any need to retrench anybody. But for the first 2 years, they won't be allowed to retrench anybody, and that is legally binding. Okay, next time I'll wear my uniform. I would suggest that the Honourable Lee, who's a good bookkeeper, not just a bookkeeper, a very good bookkeeper. We've got our own very good bookkeeper, who's the CFO. That, you know, insofar as she's able to answer some of these questions, and I hope, Chairperson, she's given the opportunity, the CFO, because it's not that difficult.
Can delegate to executives as you think that's the response? So you can delegate to any of your executives as you think fit.
Thank you for giving me that power. Thank you. The SNA is not back in debt. So I think your question about not seeing the financial statements, I can say, and I said before, I mean, obviously the audit of the year ending end of 31st of March 2023, they've not yet completed the audit. As for the other four audits, they've done them. And so I think it's between you and the AG. Unless there's something I don't know about legalities and whether they are able to, but they can explain that themselves. But for the moment, those reports are done. I said before that while the year 2022-23, the audit is still commencing, I can say it again, it's at this stage, while we are awaiting the audited statement, it's showing a modest profit. So no loss in that financial year. We all, in preparing the corporate plan, as I indicated when I made my few opening remarks, we do factor in the 3 billion rand, and we, you know, in terms of our expansion plans. But by the end of that, the CFO will demonstrate that to you. It would have been nice to have received the money pledged by Treasury. We did not receive it. You could put pressure on Treasury if you wish on our behalf. But we did not receive it. It was not mentioned in the MTEF and so medium-term budget policy statement. And we are now assuming that we will not get anything from Treasury. And we will be cash positive by the end of this financial year, and the cash flow projections indicate that without any of this. Yes, we have managed to cover the receiverships. And that is a positive sign about a turned around SAA already, that it was able to do so without any injection or without any support from Treasury. We were able to do so. We'd have been able to do some of the other things we would like to do if that money from Treasury were available to cover this, but it wasn't, and it isn't, and we will go through, and we no longer factor it in at all.
We do factor in, as I said, the 3 billion rand payables over a 3-year period. So the, on the, you know, the being a going concern, well, it is, SAA is a going concern, and it will be a going concern, but it's not the kind of concern we would like it to be. it's not the company that we would like it to be, and it can only move forward more rapidly in the event of some of this capital injection being forthcoming. But for the moment, it's not facing any kind of danger of collapse, even without anything from Treasury, and that's important to note. So can Jakarta make its 3 billion rand contribution? I'm not in a position to say this, to answer that. I can say though that,
and the deputy minister might want to add to that, is that, you know, this board, and not even the previous board, had anything to do with the decision to go for a share equity partner. But I can say that if this had not happened, SAA was facing liquidation. It would not have been an SAA to come and report to you now, today. It would have been liquidated. So at the time, of course, there weren't willing buyers. So where we are today, Chairperson and Honourable Somio, is not where we were at the time. SAA was not in this space at that time. SAA was not in a position to negotiate favourable terms. So at the moment the fixed property, the valuation of the property puts it at about 5 billion rand. We did a second valuation to confirm that, and it more or less accorded with the first valuation. But that is not the goodwill. That is not the potential earnings. It is just simply an evaluation of the fixed property of SAA. It's around 5 billion rand, just over 5 billion rand. Now, if you want to, and this is really speculative, if you want to give some kind of rationale for the 3 billion rand, the 3 billion rand, in theory, is a payment of you know, a 51% share paid over a period, because it's by way of agreement. So that 3 billion rand would certainly be more than 51% of the 5 billion rand assessed value of the property. But as I said, this is a little bit academic, because at the time, that I am told, that was the best we could achieve in terms of an arrangement with a potential share equity partner. It wasn't based on, well, you know, we're buying your fixed property. Nobody buys fixed property of a loss-making operation, because your investments will soon be ground to nothing. And you can't just sell all of your fixed assets anyway. So we're also not factoring in the budget for next year and beyond. We're not factoring in any of the potential recovery. So, you know, when you say you're worried that it should go to the revenue fund, well, that's the procedure. So it doesn't feature in our budget for next year at all. So the budget, when I say we'll be cash positive by the end of this financial year and beyond, it's not cash positive based on an assumption of any of this money coming into SA. I think, Honourable Somio, you raise very important questions, and to some extent I've attended to it, because you're right, we inherited the situation. Are we doing justice to the task that we've been given as a board, as the accounting authority? Are we complying with all of the requirements of the PFMA? The answer is yes. And I don't think that could have been a positive answer some time ago, but now it really is. And if you want further engagements with any of the chairs of the committees of the board, you are absolutely free to do so, in your individual capacities or as a committee, so that they can give you more information about how we function, what they found. We've got a very, very hard-working ARC, Audit and Risk Committee, And as I said, they serve as the risk committee, the audit and risk committee for SAA as a holding company, and or SAA as a company and the subsidiaries. So they really are going beyond the call of normal duty as a board committee. I'm going to allow Lindsay, the CFO, to give in simple terms, to give you some details on
how we get to that, and sort of how we get to the point where we can survive without sources of finance other than the assumed 3 billion rand. But we haven't got it in the coffers yet, and we have paid back all of the money that needed to be paid back. We're not in debt in any way at all. And if that's a miracle, she'll explain to you how that miracle was performed. The handling capacity, I think the CEO could answer that. And the licenses, I think that's a very important question. I can't remember who asked the question. Honorable Somyo. We've managed to retain the landing rights at Heathrow Airport. There are licenses and licenses. One are aviation related licenses, which would be part of the processes that need to be gone through before the share equity arrangement kicks in properly. So before the new SAA with a 51% shareholding of Takatsu, if it is Takatsu, which is what the agreement is at the moment, it will have to go through certain licensing applications as well, but the CEO could speak more about that. The point that you made, Chairperson, on the if it can't be forthcoming, if it can't come up with a 3 billion rand, there's no deal. I'm sure the minister has already agreed with that. That's the condition of the deal. I think maybe the department can answer that. The acting director general can give some more information about, or the deputy minister, maybe some more information about the processes that still have to be gone through in order to conclude the deal. But they're not, and you know that it includes the repeal of the SAA Act. And then in answer to your question about the minority, Global Aviation, Global Aviation has not demanded any payment. They have said that because that is a condition of the deal, is that they should divest, they should move away from it. They have put it into a firm of consultants to assess the potential value. They would like to have somebody take over that share. On whether that's necessary, given the state that we find ourselves in, Chairperson, to proceed with the sale, well, that agreement has been made already, and as I said, it was made at the time. Had it not been made, we would not have been here today. So that's an agreement that has been struck with Takatsu. If anything happens that the agreement cannot proceed, or if any of the terms of the agreement cannot be complied with, then one would have to go back to the drawing board. And one could then reconsider even whether one wants to dispose of a 51% share of SAA. One could do that. But right now that it's an agreement and one has to honor the agreement. On the Mumbai route, I couldn't agree more. Speak to the man who once wore a pilot's outfit, and maybe that man can explain why that route was discontinued in the first place. It should not have been discontinued. So the cost of the, you know, what happened during the state capture during the that bad period, which actually precedes the state capture period, it's a whole lot of corrupt activities, but some of the costs are not even listed. The cost of bad decisions like discontinuation of a Mumbai route is not considered. And lastly, on that factor of a Mumbai route, for example, the advantage of having a national carrier is that the returns that you get on a route go far beyond what the airline might make. So the airline might say, well, actually, this is a profitable route. But even if it were very marginally profitable, even if it were running at a marginal loss, if you factor in the trade and the tourism that it brings,
and you look at it and you model it differently, you could find out, you could actually come to the conclusion that even in the event of a partial loss, but then that partial loss has to be covered from somewhere. Either cross-subsidization or from your own operations, but it's SA is simply too small for that. So any route that we choose now will have to be go through thorough due diligence, because we cannot afford to take on loss-making routes. I would totally agree with you, Chairperson, that the potential of reintroduction of the Mumbai route has to be seriously considered, and it does have the possibility of a direct Mumbai-Durban flight, which I don't believe any of the other intercontinentals might suffer. And we will invite you to be on that first inaugural flight. So there are other routes that, by the way, offer immense opportunities, but for the moment, and I'm not at liberty to reveal it right now. Sorry?
East London,
there's no such place. Heathrow is not in the east of London. I shouldn't be distracted by elf. I mean, honorable leaves.
If I may, Chairperson, and if I could ask the CFO just to, and then the CEO, if the CFO can just
give you some clarity on how we come to the conclusion that we are, from a cash flow point of view, we're scraping it, but we're not in danger, and how we are, why we are not in debt, notwithstanding the fact that we didn't get the money that was pledged by Treasury. Lindsay? Everyone is acting. You've only got 5 months left.
Let's go to the
acting.
Thank you, Chair. All protocols observed. Yeah, just to answer the question on the money. Correct, there was a 2.5 billion rand expectation, if you can put it that way, of which 1 billion we received on the 3rd of April, which was in the recent budget. So, which does not leave the 2.5 billion hold. It's a smaller number. However, in past years, the SAA has recognised that the deficits have been constrained. There were previous payments that were required to be made. Remember, we're doing 3 years of August payments for the receivership creditors. SAA recognised the need that we need, if the government did not give us funds, we still had to make that payment. Without making those payments, we would then revert back into business rescue and then automatically into liquidation, ultimately into liquidation. So SAA was very cognizant of the fact that those amounts needed to be paid. SAA did look at what it could do to source funds. We are not in debt. We do not even have an overdraft with any of the banking organizations within that we have accounts with. But what we did have, if you look back, all airlines, in fact, operate through various ways of receiving their money. So the credit card comes via credit cards, it comes via the IATA clearing system. And all of these providers, over time, have required guarantees and or cash in order to reduce their exposure should something happen to an airline. So there were cash that had been put with IATA, and also that the credit card acquirers, particularly internationally, had built up against a situation where refunds were unable to be paid. In the business rescue process, we did receive some funding to process refunds. As SAA processed their refunds, obviously the exposure to these other organizations reduced because they did not have these open tickets, essentially, that someone could claim against. So we engaged with these entities over the last 18 months, And as our exposure, or their exposure to us reduced, they were willing over time to refund small incremental amounts to us. Those amounts, coming back in dollars generally, enabled us to have sufficient additional cash where we could actually support these payments that were made. Thank you.
I would suggest that, you know, if you have coffee with Lindsay, that she can go into more detail and show you the figures in that they become clearer to you, because you only understand numbers when you see the numbers, not when not the narrative you
understand. So it's just numbers and not a date.
Thank
you, Chair. I'll just address two questions in the interest of time. My chairman has done an impressive work in responding to the questions. The two questions, the why do you still want to sell? And the Mumbai route issue, and of course, Chair, I also answered the air traffic licenses, just to add to the chairperson. But before I get to that, Chair, as the CEO, part of my job is to protect and promote the reputation of South African Airways, which has a lot of brand value. The Honorable Lees made reference to the billion stolen from Air Link by SAA. I just wish to respectfully correct that that matter was through a very arduous judicial process, two court cases, one recently dismissed, where Air Link was claiming that some 800 million rand should have been refunded to them by the business first two practitioners, and two courts looked at the matter, and in the last few weeks the matter was decided in favor of friendly business first two practitioners and not by SAA as such, because SAA was not a direct litigant, and then Air Link I think collected some amount of money, like all the other creditors, which was a quantum discounted from the rent as it happened during such quasi-liquidation processes. South African Airways views itself in this industry as a national carrier that, amongst other things, has a responsibility for promoting and strengthening the local aviation industry. We view our peers as competitors and not necessarily as competitors to a degree. So we really would wish to support them where we can, and we will not act in uncompetitive or dishonest way of weakening them. Second question, why do you still want to sell when SAA is doing what apparently as well as it does? The very educated view of the very professional people at SAA, and I don't include myself among them, have come to a determination that the way the global aviation industry and airline industry structure, South African Airways, even in its positive performance, as the chairperson said, will be revealed as when this the last financial year financials are even in that state, South African Airways cannot remain and be an asset to the people of South Africa in its current form as a 100% government-controlled airline, where you have a fiscal faced with such socio-economic challenges. SAA needs external funding, and this funding can only come from capital markets, be they domestic, international, or through some equity partnership. So whether it is the Dakato Aviation or Dakato Aviation Plus or someone else, but the structural future model of South African Airways in the SAA needs a strategic equity partner. So we view ourselves as the valorizing the current SAA, preparing
for the shareholders, so that when the shareholder take any other decision, there will be a live SAA that can be negotiated around. Air traffic license routes do not belong to any airline.
They are the properties of the state. They are the species of the bilateral agreement that government, the state enters through the Department of Transport with other countries. South African Airways, as a mega airline that it used to be, had a number of route rights from Kazakhstan to Afghanistan to Hong Kong, including to Lubumbashi and so on. And the law, there are two law acts of parliament that govern the administration of this matter. But this law says, if you are not using your allocated traffic light in 6 months, you lose that traffic light, or you have to continually reapply for that retention. So from business first, when SAA was unoperative for 18 months, SAA had the danger of losing all those licenses. So when SAA restarted, one of the major jobs that we have been involved in has been to issue what they call Annexure L submission that we submit on a quarterly basis to the licensing council to explain to the licensing council that please give us time. This is the reason why we are not flying. We don't have enough aircraft yet. We will get aircraft. This is our plan. We will do it. And they take most of them because the route rights are put into a pot. All the other airlines are competing. We compete over these licenses. So to a degree, chairperson, the fact that we are doing well, we are partly propelled by this legal or legislative imperative. We are a fish that has to swim. Otherwise, we will sink. If SAA does not continue to fly, and unless we announce all these rules, we're going to lose them to our competitors. So that's how it operates, honorable members. The Mumbai route, the chairperson addressed the corruption issue related to that. But for us currently, this is the global shape of the market has changed from what it was that time, that period of when SAA flew the Mumbai route. You have Emirates that has developed Dubai as a very strong hub, and a number of other things that have happened within the India aviation market itself. We have studied this, besides our problem of availability of aircraft. But Chair, the good news is most of the traffic that came from Mumbai was connecting Johannesburg to go to Latin America. There was a whole south route that was happening. Now that we have relaunched at Sao Paulo, the Mumbai case has gone from red to yellow towards green in terms of our internal processes of approving routes. So that will be the primary push. Part of the good news is that Air India Tata is a member like South African Airways of Star Alliance, and as a member of Star Alliance, we are already in negotiations with them on how we can work together on this route. I will leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll come back to Tim. We'll make the concluding remarks. SIU.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Start off with Honorable Mentor's question. Are there cases that we have not reported on in terms of what has been reported by the allegations? The allegations that we received, as you could see in our presentation, we have indicated them in terms of focus areas. So all those focus areas cover all the allegations that we've received.
And as you would have seen, that most of the focus areas have really progressed to a stage where we're able to now indicate where the conclusion of the investigation will be. However, if you look at focus area number 19, 21, 22, and 23, they're still ongoing. So those could be areas where there will be further findings that will be reported. So we will ensure that all the allegations are covered and all the findings are reported, including where now investigations are still ongoing. With regard to the recovery of monies lost by SAA, Honorable Lees, does money recovered to SAA refer to fiscal or to SAA? Our model of recovery in terms of the law that regulates SAU work is that when we investigate and we find that the state institution has lost or suffered damages in terms of certain actions by companies or individuals, we then apply. We used to go to the High Court, now we apply a special tribunal. We've got the what would be called legal standing to apply on behalf of state institutions. And more often, we apply as the first applicant, and the state institutions would apply as with us as second applicants. Now, at the end of the process, where we get the order for money to be paid back, it would invariably be back to the state, but the recovery model is back to the state institution. But we do inform National Treasury that so much has been recovered, and in terms of our recovery model, we return it to the state institution. In many instances, we've had comments, even by concerned members of the public, that the monies are being returned to the same institutions where they have been lost through corruption or maladministration. But of course, then it becomes very important that, and the point I made earlier, that this provides SAA to make a clean break with the past, whether it's version 2 or version 3 of SAA. In which case, that the cleanup should involve consequence management. Those who caused this irregularity, the maladministration and corruption, should not be found in the institution. In which case, it would give the Honorable Committee and the public some assurance that the monies would be put to intended purpose. The other question that I wanted to respond to was really around the 3.4 billion. There's a line there where we say rent value of potential cash and or assets to be recovered. And the word potential derives from the fact that we've investigated this matter, this contract to the value, contract value of 3.4 billion. Those are the contracts that we will go and challenge to be cancelled in the special tribunal so that we recover the monies lost by SAA. The chair of the board makes a legal principle in a correct way, that when we go and recover, if it's a contract value that we investigated, the contract value is give or take 1 billion, and we find that it was awarded irregularly, then there's a recovery process
that the court will order. And there's a whole lot of principles that the court takes into account. What has the company delivered, what the SAA has suffered and all of that, there's a legal formula. Correct, we may not recover the whole 1 billion based on those principles. And that process is called due and appropriate order that the court makes. They really apply a very strict legal principle, but will end up with recoveries that are based on the legal principle. I think, Chair, those were really the questions I wanted to respond to that were raised towards SIU. But yes, this, as we now observe, you know, the transition of SAA, this has been the reactive part. The reactive part in the sense of having received all these allegations and making sure that they are investigated. And that will continue, despite version 2 or 3. And will of course take the legal position into account, that this will not disappear. We'll continue to investigate, we'll continue to ensure that the investigations are concluded, including, and that's why we included the part of the state capture, because the state capture investigated, gave a report, and said certain investigations should be done, certain recoveries should be done, and so on. That will continue. But of course, from a maladministration perspective, we will also look at what had cost this failures, governance failures, and who were responsible. So now, still on the reactive side, on holding those who caused this to account, but now we also transit onto the proactive side in terms of, you know, inputting into management to say this were our findings, take them into account as you go into version 2 or 3 so that prevention mechanisms can be put in place to avoid what happened before being repeated. So, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that's really the core that we will answer going forward. And of course, on an ongoing basis, we can report in terms of consequence management. What has become of the disciplinary process, what has become of the recovery, how much have we ultimately recovered, so that the committee is informed. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
thank you so much, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members, for the questions that have been posed to us. Maybe just to premise our responses to the question is that over the 4-year period that we've looked into, I think we have clearly articulated the challenges that SAA has faced, especially in terms of making sure that their accounting records fairly reflect the transaction that the entity has entered into. Now, looking into that process and how does SAA get out of the current situation they're in, I think in our recommendation as well as the input that was provided by management of SAA is the issue of the remedial action plan. When you look at the challenges that have been faced, you would then appreciate the fact that a lot of the root causes that have contributed to the findings that we've reported, in some instances, are going to take time to resolve. And it is also quite critical that as the remedial action plan is being developed, it is clear in terms of what is going to be addressed in the short to medium term and what would they be addressed in the long term. But at the core of it is that really doing, is, at the core of it is really making sure that the root causes that have led to the internal control deficiencies being addressed. Part of that ensuring the issues around stability and executive management level, ensuring that the adequate record keeping that is being kept within the entity, you will realize that in a lot of instances we were not able to express any opinion on the numbers that we reflected, as well as on the compliance, because the information was simply not available to for us to look into. I just want to then deal with a question from Honorable Mende around the irregular expenditure as well as the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It is correct to say that over a period of time we have seen an increase in the irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. However, it is also important for us as the ADSA to indicate that due to the limitations of scope that we've experienced during the audit, we are not able to express an opinion on whether those numbers are complete. So you would have seen that in the audit report and in the briefing document that is included, we've then clearly indicated that the figures that have been reported might not be complete. Having said that, more directly to the question is to say the PFMA then requires once an act of non-compliance has been identified, which has led to irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it then requires that investigations must then be conducted into that particular irregularity, one, to determine from an accountability perspective and consequence management perspective who are the officials that have been that have been responsible for that particular act, but secondly, to then assess the process in terms of what then can be recovered. What we found during our audit was that when we then looked at the details of the irregular expenditure and irregular expenditure, they were not proper records kept in terms of the non-compliance themselves, but secondly in terms of ensuring that the investigations have been conducted. So we were not able to get details of the investigations that have been conducted, as well as the completeness of the register. We were not able to confirm that. What that has required then is, based on the findings that we've raised, for the accounting authority to then still continue to look into those instances of irregular expenditure and processes into the expenditure, and to finalize the investigation where the information is available. And that will also assist in terms of the consequence management that we then need to then take place. So for purposes of the question that has been raised in terms of what are the funds that need to be recouped, we have provided the details of those methods to the funding authority and to management. Our recommendation is that where the investigations have not been conducted, that those investigations then be conducted, and then you would then be able to identify who are the responsible officials, what are the irregularities that have led to that, and what is the consequence management that needs to take place. Following that, from our own perspective as the ADSA, when we then refer this matter to the accounting authorities, to the extent that we see that adequate action has not been taken in terms of investigating those matters, we do then exercise our powers as provided to us in the Public Audit Amendment Act, which mainly we refer to as the material regularity. And to the extent that we see that those investigations are not being conducted and the necessary action is not being taken, we will then consider whether those matters of non-compliances have led to financial losses. And to the extent that they have, we will then use our extended powers to then make sure that adequate action is taken against those that are responsible. The second question was around the Dakota Consortium, and I think in answering this question, one has to maybe start with the premise that when financial statements are prepared, they are supposed to reflect a fair presentation of the account of the of the account of the of any particular entity. And a disclaimer of opinion tells us that when you look at whether the financial statements of SAA fairly present the accounting affairs of the entity over the 4-year period,
our observation was that when we could not express an opinion, but then if you look at it from the fact of does the financial statement that fairly present the financial affairs of the entity, you would note that in our observation we're not able to make that assertion. The challenge that it then poses is then when you are in the process of the SEP transaction or the disposal of the stake in SAA, you would then have a challenge in terms of determining the appropriateness of the selling price, and the impact of that is that the sale of the selling price might not be at the benefit of or might not be at the best interest of the state. And that is purely because when you then look at fair presentation, those financial statements are not able to give you that particular assertion. So that was our observation with regards to that particular matter. Honourable Lee asked a question relating to the taking of the annual report. Typically when, and I may premise it on the basis of the PFMA and what the PFMA requires. The PFMA in Section 65 requires that the executive authority tables the annual report within a period of 6 months. What then has happened, and I think we probably provided some context into it when we were indicating the sequence of events leading to the ultimate submission of the financial statement and the ultimate finalization of the audit, is that one, for the period when the entity was under business rescue, the financial statements themselves were not presented to the Auditor General for auditing. And that process was then only subsequently adopted subsequent to the finalization of the business rescue process. So over the probably three years, the ADSA was not presented with the annual financial statements for audit. What that then does is that when the financial statements were then presented to us for audit, we did finalize the audit as quickly as we could. And once that has happened, as we indicated, the annual general meeting was held on the 10th of November. The executive authority then has the responsibility of tabling the annual report to the structures of Parliament. If we do foresee at the ADSA that there is undue delay in terms of the tabling of the annual report, then we do exercise our power of office given to us in terms of the PFMA that we do table on behalf of the executive authority. We will table our own audit report. But in this case, what we've observed is that there has been indication that the executive authority will be tabling. But if we do notice that there is a delay, then we certainly exercise our powers in terms of taking that particular audit report over the 4 year period. And then maybe to deal with the questions around the going concern assumption. What we've indicated is that when you look at the going concern assumption that has been included in the financial statement, there is some material uncertainties that have been indicated in the notes to the financial statement. And the fact that the Takato Consortium has a dependency in terms of the timing of when that particular transaction is going to be concluded, the financing element of the transaction, those have been also highlighted as areas where we believe that there is a material uncertainty. And to that extent, management has been disclosed that in the financial statement. Equally, in our own audit report, we have been highlighted that there is that material uncertainty that exists as it relates to the going concern assumption. So for the users of the financial statement, when you do read the fact that this financial statement has been prepared on a going concern assumption, one of the critical factors is to then realize those material uncertainties that have then been listed as being impacting that going concern assumption. So if, for instance, the money that are required to finalize the business services plan are not forthcoming, then you then realize that will then have a direct impact on the going concern assumption. So to that extent, we then highlighted to the users of the financial statement to say, when you read the financial statement, please be aware of the material uncertainties that exist that would impact the going concern assumptions. And maybe the last question that I also provide in the contribution to my colleagues, which is maybe something that we would want to add, was that when we look at the Jakarta Consortium, we looked at it under the premise of the audit of the Department of Public Enterprises. And in particular, we looked at whether there were frameworks that are available within government when a such transaction is conducted. And to that extent, what we then identified was that there wasn't necessarily a regulatory framework that talked to the SEP transaction. And to that extent, one of the recommendations that we did make to the Department of Public Enterprises was the need for a clear regulatory framework that would then govern the SEP transaction. And to that extent, when we then engage the department as well in terms of that, and I'm now addressing Honorable Sophie's question around why there is a disagreement between ourselves and the department as it relates to following the principles of Section 217, our observation was that in the absence of a regulatory framework that governs the sub-transaction, one would then look at Section 217 of the Constitution, which then talks to the fact that transactions that are entered into must be processed in a transparent, fair, and it must be most advantageous to the state. And our principle was really that in the absence of this framework, the department then could fall onto those aspects of the Constitution then to conduct and review the transaction. I hope I've addressed all the questions, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to check if there is any better input from my colleagues. I think we covered everything.
Right.
I think in closing, Honorable Chair, to say that indeed, what we found at SAA was really concerning to us as the OGC General. However, we do believe that with appropriate governance structures, with stability, executive management, and also even to the question around our recommendation over the stability or driving stability at the board level, is that we did note that over a period of time there has been interim boards that have been appointed by the minister, and really what we are pleading for is that even with the current interim board, we need to see its longevity in terms of creating that stability. The internal audit is a critical function within.
Thank you very much. Fortunately, the House is sitting at 2 and it's got a long list of things that we have been asked to skip by the presiding officers to the time allocated for committees, and we have exceeded that time now. So we call for compliance, we must be compliant as well. DM, may I give you an opportunity to make concluding remarks and then you will call it a day. So if there's anything else that submission, I know you just still sent some things to say, you can just send it through Rolly writing for the consolidating of today's meeting and this report. DM, over to you.
Thank you very much, sir.
It's outsourced, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will really be brief so that I could allow the acting DG just to answer on the issue of question raised by Honorable Mende, whether the say of SAA was it fair in the public interest, and I think he emphasized on that, and Honorable Lees also went into it also. On the Dakota deal, and so that they can then give an assurance transparently on what really happened. But starting from where the airline was at the time,
the creditors were going to court. They were going to apply for the liquidation of the SAA at the time. And then the shareholder, the Minister Executive Authority, had to put it under business arrest to save it from going the liquidation route at the time. Was it the best decision? Yes, because now today we speak of an airline that is on the skies, because otherwise we could have gone the route of South African Air Express, which is now completely gone, down. We can no longer do anything about it. So this one we're able to, and we're trying to do the same with Mango to rescue it from going liquidation. And obviously at the time when the issue was then in business rescue, you had to look for strategic partners. The bid was opened, and then I think they would then give the details. How much was the price, and based on what? I'll give that to the DG. So let me also affirm that the current board that has been appointed is really doing it stable and doing its job, and the management is focused, and we're quite happy with the version 2, the way it's going towards version 3, if the version 3 will emerge. But using version 2 as the basic element of an airline that will be emerging strongly and so forth. So this part is definitely stable, but I know that you wanted to know stability in terms of the term of office of the board being interim, the executive management also being permanent, but because of this deal on the table, you can't then have that in place, because when the 51% shareholder comes on board, there will be changes definitely, and therefore we are caught in between making it permanent for 3 years, and you don't know within the 3 years, 6 months and the like, the 51% shareholder, since the agreement is on the table, he has the money, and therefore I want it this way. So we are caught in that particular environment, Honorable Somi. And then the last one just was the question you asked, and we want to echo what the minister said. No money, no deal. And should anything happen and the deal does not go through, we look at other possibilities, and I think Minister emphasized on that particular issue, we still put it that way. And obviously we have to wait for other processes to happen. Competition Commission done, tribunal has already concluded on it, is done by the shareholder of the consortium of Tagazo. They have majority, has minorities, and the minorities are still looking at their options based on the outcome of the tribunal. So that is why the negotiations of the deal are moving slowly towards its conclusion so that we can realize the money. But DG, if you could come in so that I do not take much of the time due to time constraints.
DG?
Thank you, Chair. I will be very close and quick given the interest of time. I just want to just reiterate the point that in terms of the table of the report, any report that is just going through the editing, it will definitely be presented to the House. That is the first point. And the second point is, was this the court?
When? When?
I've just been informed by SAA that they're just going through the editing and just the covering and the setting up. So at, before you go on holiday, or recess, is it recess? Apologies for that. Before you go on recess, it shall definitely be tabled. The second point I just wanted to just indicate is that was this a good deal? At the time when we actually engaged, when we're working on this deal, we're looking at two possibilities, BR or liquidation. And we have now traversed the path. Today we are here. We've now actually presented the financial statement on a going concern. And also what is important to articulate is that we are talking about a going concern without any government guarantee that it's been there. And also, much more importantly and much more fundamentally, you've got the name and the brand of the entity that is actually flying, that is actually looking to expand its network going forward. And that is actually very, very important that we need to actually you know, applaud from that basis, and also to thank the committee and the members for some of the probing questions and also holding us to enable us to even to sharpen the pen and the pencil in terms of what we need to do in terms of actually reviewing and making sure that you get value for money. I can see that the chair is wanting to cut me. Thank you.
I thought you'd go on that one, that on the terms you can go on. Colleagues, I want to apologize on the issue of time. It's really a recent decision which is not of our making. We don't mind pushing right up until close enough to 2 o'clock, but again, that is pent, so we must comply. So thank you very much. I think you need to conclude on this matter. We can't deal with time, as long as you're going to stay standing in mind, waiting for money. It's holding you to ransom on progress. I'm taking a key strategic decision, so that issue must be resolved. Colleagues, tomorrow, SIU law enforcement agencies on update on cases, right, Dominic? That's tomorrow. Next week, presidency on Tuesday, again on SIU related matters. On Wednesday, road accident fund and SIU related matters. Colleagues, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Good afternoon. Take care.